Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
What the f*** happened to the Delta I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the guts, huh? This could be the greatest night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst.
Oh, we're afraid to go with you, Pluto. We might get in trouble.
Well, just kiss my ass from now on! Not me! I'm not gonna take this! Warmer, he's a dead man! Marmalade, dead! Niedermeyer!
Dead! Pluto's right. Psychotic, but absolutely right. We gotta take these bastards. Now, we could fight them with conventional weapons. That could take years and cost millions of lives. No, in this case, I think we have to go all out. I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part.
We're just the guys to do it.
Minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of February in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, a cavalcade of whimsy unparalleled in all of human history. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. If you'd like to be part of the program via the telephone, you can do that. It is astoundingly easy, my friends, my chums, my amigos, my companions, my cuarto caminos. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com is the email address. You can also email Dawn Taylor if you like, dawn@rickemerson.com. That is dawn@rickemerson.com. Hey, just so I can clarify, what was it you were spilling on yourself this morning when I looked over, this afternoon rather, a few minutes ago?
I dropped a peanut down my cleavage.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. For some reason, the word peanut is hilarious in any and all context. I think it's because just now when you said I dropped a peanut down my cleavage, first of all, there's two different reactions. You get to cleavage and I'm immediately distracted by everything else because, you know, guy. But the I dropped a peanut part, like, this is where you realize the speed and rapidity with which the human mind works. Between the word peanut and the down my, it's just like when you hear about people that their whole life flashes before them and you think, well, how is that possible? How could
you suddenly heard that Found a Peanut song in your head or something like that?
No. I heard Andre the Giant going, would anybody like a peanut? from the Princess Bride. I don't know why. And that was
what's
just
really disturbing is that I dropped the peanut. I felt the peanut go down into my shirt. And I thought to myself, I am not going to reach for that peanut. Because if I do, Rick will see.
Yes.
And then I looked up, and you were snickering. You had seen the peanut just go down into my shirt.
You know, you're like a living example of one of those USA Today infographics. What's Dawn dropping down her shirt today? 32% beans, 12% a carrot. Here's the thing. In an unsteady and unstable, uncertain world, a world filled with all kinds of upheaval and turmoil and torment and strife, that is something on which I can count. It's something on which I can rely, Dawn. So I'd like to thank you for providing a little consistency day in and day out.
You're welcome. I'm glad my eating habits amuse you.
Let me ask you this. And I'm not saying this as a criticism. I'm just curious more than anything else. Has it made you more cautious in the way that you eat, or are you just sort of, are you a little laissez-faire about it? You're just kind of zen?
No. I've been dropping things on myself and spilling things on myself my entire life.
It's become tradition.
It's just my way. Every single shirt I own, I believe, I've actually gotten better. I was going to say this, and it's not true anymore. There was a time in my life when every shirt I owned, there was a permanent grease stain on my right breast.
Yeah.
Because I would just always just thump. Something would always fall out of my mouth. I don't know. I think it might be a depth perception problem.
And that's because it looks like you're leaking.
I don't know.
It looks like you got leaky boob.
As I've mentioned before here, when I go out and eat out in public somewhere with Patrick, oft times he will actually remark at the end of the meal, "Hey, you didn't spill anything on yourself."
That's pretty great, Dawn. That shirt's pretty unstained.
Yeah.
All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of the program, you can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. The text box is open. You can also send us a message via Skype if you'd like. It is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. That is all one word. Rick Emerson Show. Coming up later in the day, we get your Hick Watch. Also, Democracy in the March. Ms. Kelly Clark will join us from Willamette Week. Apparently, this is my fault. So I guess Cheryl had sent me a message yesterday, but I missed it somehow. Cheryl sent me a message saying that Aaron Mesh was going to be unavailable. He was in the trenches. Mm-hmm. He was out covering the world. And so we're going to be talking to Kelly Clark today. So, and I think Kelly Clark, so they got like their, not a Valentine's Day issue as such, but of course, you know, blah, 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 Valentine's Day. So they're doing a bunch of stories like that. I think on the front, if I saw this correctly, it's one of those things where you just glanced at it. And then you think to yourself, did I really see that? I believe the cover of this week's Willamette is it's a bouquet made of salami. And I think it's a story about something called, I think there's like a singing salamigram that you can get sent to somebody. Which, by the way, nobody tell my wife, I think I've found this year's Valentine's Day gift. And to her credit, like, Lara's not really into Valentine's Day either. It's not like a thing, you know, that's a thing, by the way, you guys, listen up, my brethren of the Rick Emerson Show. Lest you sometimes be tempted to fall into the habits of a less couth individual, perhaps emulate the remarks or behavior of elder male members of your family and criticize feminism. Let me just tell you this. Here's something you can thank feminism for. It is because of women's studies classes that my wife rejects Valentine's Day. So that has saved me just a massive amount of money and time and stress in my own life. So thank you, Gloria Steinem, for that. That is the female mystique working for you.
Yeah. Valentine's Day just makes me angry.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It made me angry when I was single. It makes me angry now that I'm not single. It's just
a no-win situation, Dawn.
It's just a ridiculous. Well, it's a ridiculous holiday. It's, you know, if you're in a relationship, it's like, you know, every time you turn around, you're being told that, and mostly men. It's almost exclusively aimed at men doing things for women.
Well, buying things.
Yeah,
for women.
It's like Well, you, if you don't do something, obviously you don't love her enough.
Right.
And that's just horrible. That's terrible. And then if you're not in a relationship for like several weeks, up to a month, everywhere you turn, everywhere you go, every store you walk into, every place you are, it's like the world is just telling you, no one loves you.
You're a loser.
There's this holiday that's going on. It's not for you.
I don't know if she ended up talking about this yesterday or not. I think I can probably mention this because she said that they were going to discuss it. So I think they probably did, but if not, I think it's a thing that she's not opposed to. So Sarah's mom does this thing every year I don't even know. I don't know whether to do the punchline first or the setup first, because I don't even know. I'll just say that her mom sends her, and I guess to her and her sister Heather both, every year Sarah's mom sends them Valentine's cards, like from mom, who, like, the one who loved you before anyone else, love mom. And but so she opened her, she got the letter yesterday, and she opens it, and, like, there's a sweet Valentine's Day card from her mom. And I made the observation that that's the sort of thing that is, it's cute if you have a boyfriend that year. If Valentine's Day comes and you don't have a boyfriend, then it's just sad. Then it's just sad and awkward. Then it's like your mom telling you when you're a kid, well, someday somebody will find you beautiful. There's lots to like about you. Which is, that's the thing that, that's like, the mom compliment always is, the mom compliment is great, except in those moments when you feel like, you've really done something many times growing up, there would just be moments where I just felt socially awkward or inept, go figure. And it's like, those are the moments where the mom compliments really ought to be the most valued, but that's when they just ring completely false and hollow because they sound obligatory.
Yeah. You're pretty in your way.
Yeah, exactly. You're beautiful. You're a sweet spirit. Well, not even. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Hick Watch coming up today. Democracy in the March. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Yes, so they got a salami bouquet in the front. Salami gram.
Okay.
Also, they have an article that actually, I haven't read this yet, but this is the sort of thing that will actually get me to go out of my way to pick up the physical copy of the paper today. They followed up with people. They put out an open call for people who had actually placed or answered successfully those misconnections ads.
Oh.
The whole, like, girl in green parka in front of me at Powell's. You were hot. I was buying Camus. Can we? Let's get coffee or whatever. So they found people who actually connected via those. And so they followed up to see how it all turned out, which I guess they do every year, but I don't think I've missed that in the past. So anyway, so we've got that. Let's see what else coming up. Top five from listener Jerry. Speaking of all things loving and or awkward. So we'll get to his top five that after been putting it up for several days. It's his top five makeout songs from his youth. So we've got that coming up. Let's see. Don Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Wednesday.
A man shoots himself in the belly with a nail gun. A woman dies after getting butt implants. And a quadriplegic man sues Disney over the It's a Small World ride.
Sometimes all of your headline teases sound like South Park things. And now with the news, a quadriplegic man on a horse. It's, what is the third one you put there? A legless man?
A quadriplegic man sues Disney over the It's a Small World ride.
Okay. Seems like his world is smaller than most. Cheryl, by the way, has just sent me a message. Said, hey, about the Kelly Clark Aaron Mesh thing, I even put a Skype emoticon to get your attention, for God's sakes. She then follows it with three different Skype emoticons. The first one is a smiley face becoming more and more angry. You can tell because he's clenching his teeth, he turns red, and then he explodes in a red splatter. The second one is just a smiley face arching an eyebrow and waggling a finger at me in a judgmental fashion. That's followed up by a smiley face that vibrates for a moment and then vomits. There you go. That's Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa, keeping things running correctly. We've also got clue number three coming up today in the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. EHVending.com is where you can find out more about that fine company. If you are the decision maker at your office, or you just find that your vending machine is filled with crap, you have the have the person who does run the joint contact EHVending.com. And we'll talk more about them later on the day. We'll have clue number three coming up as well. Let's see. I got two emails to read here before we do anything else. This is from, she's given me a pronunciation to her name here, I think. I believe it is Bajent. Her name is Peta. Peta? P-E-T-A. Peta? Peta?
Sure.
Peta. Peta.
Peta. Peta. Let's say,
right.
Peta.
Well, she says, Rick, I subscribed last week to your show, but because I've been having issues with my computer. Oh, this is from from South Wales. New South Wales.
Which is
now,
where?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Okay, it's near Australia or part of Australia. Whatever. They got the Queen on their money. They're British. So if there's a new... I don't mean to revisit this. If there's a new South Wales, was there an old South Wales? There's Wales. I understand this. There's a new South Wales. It seems like we're missing a step there.
Yeah, I don't know why there's a... I don't understand why the South is in there.
All right.
Because I know that there's, we have a lot of places here in the United States that were named because the British came over, like New York, New Jersey,
right.
New Amsterdam.
Right.
Of course, that wouldn't have been the British, but you know what I mean. So, So, the new South part, I kind of confused
me. Now, is Wales the country? Is that divided into North and South, kind of like a...
I don't think so.
Okay, so it isn't like a thing like a North and South America sort of thing.
No, I don't know.
All right. Well, in any event. I subscribed last week to your show, but because I've been having issues with my computer, I downloaded a week's worth of the show and have only just caught up to the South Wales, New South Wales debate. The whole thing just made my day. Thanks for that. Smiley face.
Huh.
Anyway, she says, by the way, she says this out. It's pronounced Cessnick. That's the city or the whatever where she lives. Please let Dawn know I wish she had been on the Dirty Dancing Midnight movie commentary. It was missing someone who wasn't ashamed to admit that they loved it.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you very much. Please forward that letter to Fatboy Roberts, to Court and Fatboy, and tell them how much you missed my voice.
Send along an emoticon that vomits.
Yes, please.
By the way. She says, P.S., your website is blocked at my work for being gruesome. You know, I find that we're blocked in a lot of places for being gruesome. Fun Employment Radio is blocked because I believe that their class is having pornographic content, which is sort of amusing. This site has gruesome or unpleasant content, depending on where you work. There's some sort of a huge red hand that just comes up on the screen that says, like, no, mustn't. Let's see, one more. This is taser training. Rick, this is from our listener, Lyle. Rick, I thought you'd like to know that I have now completed taser training and I am now authorized to carry the taser while on duty at my police job. While it may not seem that exciting, I thought you might be interested in the opportunity to watch the video of me getting to ride the lightning, so to speak. Would I ever? And to talk about the taser works, how the taser works and what it feels like to be tased. For myriad reasons, many of which are legal, I can't send you the video. However, if you'd like to get together and watch the video of me being tased...
Oh, yes.
I'd be more than happy to show it to you and let you live vicariously through me without having to experience the tasing firsthand. For any reason you feel like you'd like to experience it firsthand, I think I could probably arrange for that to happen as well. So that's so this is listener Lyle, who for his job in law enforcement has been tased and apparently had it filmed. Don, would you like to see listener Lyle being tased?
Oh, God, yes.
All right. Fantastic. Oh, by the way, Cheryl wants us to know, guess what? In addition to this, we're going to be having a cop come by the show in March to talk about tasers.
Hey.
Well done, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Fantastic. Go find a tasey emoticon for that. That's fantastic. All right, so I guess in March we're going to be a cop here talking about tasing, and then listener Lyle, who I believe is Lyle for the formerly of the Muddy River Nightmare Band, not to be confused with the River Bottom Nightmare Band, that he has been tased on film and is going to let us watch it. That's fantastic. All right. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. A whole bunch of things that I haven't gotten to over the last whatever. I don't really have time to catch up on all of them now because I want to ask you about this new kind of cookie that you apparently made last night. Did you bring a sample of it?
Oh, indeed I did.
What? You said it's got a new ingredient?
Well, here's the thing. There is this restaurant that is all the rage in New York right now. Much of the way Magnolia Bakery was hot, hot, hot for a while. There's this place called Momofuku Milk Bar. And it's a noodle joint. But they also have these really sort of clever and edgy desserts. Like they make their own soft serve ice cream, and they have flavors like cereal milk, ice flavored soft ice cream, which they've trademarked, by the way. But anyway,
what is cereal milk?
Well, you know how the milk tastes when you drink it
after you're done with the cereal, and it has that sort of sugary taste.
Yeah, they actually soak cereal in the milk before they make the ice cream. So the ice cream flavor is cereal milk.
That's interesting. What kind of cereal do you suppose it is?
I'm not sure.
Like a Captain Crunch sort
Something
of a thing?
Something like
that.
Wow. Think, yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right. Good for them.
But yeah, so they do a lot of really, really interesting desserts. And there's this one particular kind of cookie that people are crazy for. And unfortunately, it got a little bent. But here you go. It's basically, I kind of actually did a take on it. The original cookie has chocolate chips. I put peanut butter chips in it, but it's an oatmeal cornflake chip.
Oh wow!
And then it has some little baby marshmallows stuck in the top, just like. But it's very salty, but it's also very sweet. It's got a really really nice texture. So I wanted you to try it.
This smells fantastic.
Because I know you like texture, and I know you like salty and sweet and
Hold
that
on.
Sort of thing.
Let me just give it a little.
And then instead of chocolate chips, I put peanut butter chips in it, and so I just sent some of those over to. To Big Ass Sandwiches this morning.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Mmm. Ah, okay, I got to set the rest of that aside for later. That's quite good. Well done, Don.
Thank you.
All right, excellent.
See, this is what the measures meant by people who can cook. Sorry. Is that you can just do that. You can just read about a thing, you know, or just hear somebody describe it or just get the idea, and then you can just go into the kitchen and make it. That's not a thing I could do.
Oh.
I mean, you could leave me in there for time and all eternity, and I would just never be able to, here's the thing I can't do in terms of cooking. I can follow directions because I'm sort of a linear person. I have no sense of, like, intuitive leaps when it comes to food preparation. I am not a guy that just can open the cupboard and go, you know what I bet would taste good with this? Because I have no idea. Marjoram. And then you just reach. I have no idea. I don't even know what marjoram really is. It's a thing that people put in stuff. I have no idea what goes with what. I am not able to connect any dots myself. I really am a cook-by-numbers kind of a guy. I need somebody just walking me through every step of the process. In no way am I ever able to figure anything out. That's all I can really do is just I can thaw and I can press a button on the microwave that says, like, you know, 5 or whatever. Have we talked about the microwave in the kitchen here and the absurd number of buttons that it's got in the front of it?
Yeah, it's got more buttons than it actually needs.
I was trying to microwave. Can I just tell you this? I was trying to heat up something. I just wanted some hot water yesterday because I got that thing where it's like I just felt like I think I'd been eating. And so I just had the thing. I just felt like my just kind of a mush mouth thing going on. So I just wanted some hot water to kind of clear everything out. And I was trying, and it's like, you know, the hot water out of the tap just wasn't heating for some reason. It was staying unacceptably cool. I tried to heat up literally just a cup of water, and it took me like 2 or 3 minutes, and I finally just gave up because I couldn't quite figure out how to do it.
You know, there's a button that just says beverage, and it does, I think, 2.5 minutes or something.
But I mean, why, here, do you find this frustrating with microwaves where, do you find that it shouldn't take more than one button to actually start the thing working, or two at the most? Where you, on every microwave in the world, you ought to just be able to hit 45 and then start, and it goes for 45 seconds.
Well, I think this microwave has this. I'm not sure about this one, but I know with mine at home, it does the thing that I find kind of annoying, is that it has the keypad, and everything up to, like, 6 is 1 minute.
Right.
And then after that, if I want to do anything over 6 minutes, I have to keep pushing the 30-second thing to keep adding more minutes. So if I want to put something in for 10 minutes...
Press it like 20 times.
I have to hit the 6, and then I have to go 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds. Yeah, I have to... And it's really annoying.
The thing they've got here is on the number pad, the 0 through 9, it's every number is not just... every button serves a dual function. The numbers also double as, like, power preset settings. So, like, you press the 5 for, like, 5 seconds or 5 minutes or whatever, and instead it goes, power setting 9. What time? And you go, well, I thought I was just setting the time. And you really weren't. You were just adjusting, like, at what temperature or whatever you wanted to cook. It seems like the microwave, it was supposed to simplify everything, where there's just one setting, one temperature, bam. Because it's not like the microwave is going to cook anything flawlessly. It's not like it preserves the texture.
Well, it's not like you can really trust the presets.
Right.
Like, it's something that says potato. Like, well, what size potato? You know, what kind of potato?
Here's the thing. Here's a preset that no one trusts. You know, the most untrusted preset on the microwave is for popcorn.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing of the popcorn, because that goes from perfect to scorched in like 3 seconds. And it's that thing where
you still have to listen. You still have to wait for that, you know.
And you have to sit there and you have to wait until there are approximately 1 or 2 seconds between pops. And that's how you know that it's done. I used to, I don't really make a lot of microwave popcorn at this point. I went through a phase where I ate a lot of that and I drifted away from it. But when I was eating a lot of microwave popcorn, it was like a totally useless superpower. I prided myself in the fact that I could sit by the microwave and more than anyone else in the office or at home, I could accurately predict when the microwave popcorn, when you had passed that golden moment, that magic time, where you had popped the absolute maximum number of kernels without going so far as to scorch those that had already been popped. And I was sort of a Jedi with that. It's a thing that I feel like a gunfighter who's retired. You know what I mean? I've just taken the guns and I've put them in the box and I put on my collar instead or whatever because I don't do it anymore. So I'm just saying, if that should be a thing that you find yourself making at some point, you say to yourself, how will I know when it's done? Just let Rick Emerson know. He'll come out of retirement for that.
By the way, I just uploaded a photo to Rick Emerson Pictures.
Is it amusing?
Well, when I went and got my visa this morning, there was one of our local hobos was at the 7 Days Market, and he has this pit bull, and it's a beautiful dog, a big brown, just gorgeous, gorgeous dog. And the dog was waiting outside the store while he was in the store, and the dog was in a shopping cart. And you can't really see because I only took a picture from the back. But the dog was wearing, if you can imagine the front of the dog, it was wearing a pink sweatshirt. But it also had draped around it a sort of a leopard skin blanket, almost like a Snuggie. So it's like a pit bull in a Snuggie in a shopping cart.
Now, it might have been a Snuggie, because they do make those for dogs.
It might have been, but maybe it was a dog Snuggie. But yes, the dog was wearing a Snuggie, a leopard skin Snuggie over a pink sweatshirt. So yes, so I uploaded a photo of a pit bull in a Snuggie in a shopping cart.
By the way, I'm all distracted by the fact that I just went to rickemerson.com and Cheryl was noting that we're going to be talking to Joelle Carter from Justified tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so I was all distracted by this picture of Joelle Carter on the main page. Hold on a second. I got to click past that. That's tonight, isn't it?
It is.
That comes back tonight on FX.
I know.
I totally forgot about
I'm
that.
I'm very excited.
It's wonderful. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. We should probably get underway, get some news here. And I'm sorry. I apologize if I gross you out at some point on the show. If it looks like I'm scratching my underarm, it's because I'm scratching my underarm.
Oh, okay.
Because I made the mistake of... I was trying to... I don't even know what... I don't know what was going on in my head when I did this. But I stopped at New Seasons the other day. And I think it's because I was getting Viso. And it's like They were the closest place between here and the house that was not a Plaid Pantry, because Plaid Pantry was going through one of those stages where the Viso was like $2 and something, and like it wasn't on sale or whatever. Like it wasn't like $1.89, it was like $2.25. And so I stop at the New Seasons, and then it's that thing. I have the phone app. I have the app for my iPhone where it tracks what groceries we need at the house. And so if I need something or if Laura needs something, we each have the app because we're nerds. And I will put on paper towels or whatever. And then it appears on her phone and my phone. So if one of us goes to the supermarket, we just check the phone, and then you know what it is you're supposed to get. And I had made a note to myself that I needed underarm deodorant. And, so I don't offend. So I stopped at New Seasons to get some Viso, and I thought, well, you know, here I'm at the supermarket. I might as well just see what else, because why not just spend your entire paycheck on, like, three grocery items?
Sure.
So I just checked the phone app, and it says, don't forget, you need deodorant. And I went, oh, my God, of course, okay. Except I'm at New Seasons, and so the only deodorant they have is, like, made of tree oil and, like, wood and dirt and bark and wax, you know?
Yep. Hemp deodorant.
Well, it's like it's and so I try, and so I'm standing there in the deodorant aisle, feeling like a chump. First of all, because every deodorant they've got there is like $75. You know, they just don't have like a regular I don't even know if they sell Right Guard anymore, but you know that, just like a regular like the bottom shelf at Safeway, which is what I normally get. And so I'm standing there looking at all this hippie deodorant, and I'm thinking, and it's like, and then it's like my sort of tight fistedness with my money and the desire to not wear hippie crap is conflicting with my laziness and the fact that I'm already at the store. It's like I don't want to make another trip. I don't have to go to Fred Meyer or Safeway, and I'm here standing in the. So I'm looking at this, trying to see.
Did you get one of those natural crystals?
No, I didn't. What do you mean a natural? Is that like the thing that's like literally like a big crystal you rub under your arm?
Yes.
No. Do they sell those?
I thought they sell those
in Parade magazine or something.
No, you get them at like New Seasons and stuff.
Well, that can't possibly work.
Well, it's not a crystal. It's some kind of...
It's like a salt rub or something?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure what they're made out of, but I can't imagine they work.
No, of course they don't.
Because one thing, hippies use them, and all hippies smell.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like... the thing about the hippies all smelling is because they all have this sort of unique fragrance that goes along with that lifestyle. None of them can tell that they smell. It's like, you know, it's just a whole room full of filth. You know, you can't really tell. You can't really start sorting it into its component parts. So I'm looking at all of the antiperspirant deodorant stuff. And I guess there's a distinction there, too, because one keeps you from sweating, and the other one lets you sweat but just makes it so you don't reek, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, that's the difference between antiperspirant and deodorant.
And so I'm looking at the entire wall of product there, and it all says, like, natural, no aluminum. And I know that aluminum probably gives you Alzheimer's or whatever, but I mean... You know what?
Also keeps you from sweating.
That's the thing, is I'd rather go a little foggy when I'm 85 than just, you know, smell like the inside of a trash can now. So, that's the thing that I'm willing to, you know, as Sam Kinison said, sometimes you got to trade off future brain cells for today's happiness. And so I'm just sitting there and I'm looking at the entire wall of antiperspirant. And so I finally go with the most mainstream hippie antiperspirant I can find, which is... Tom's of Maine,
yeah.
Because they make a toothpaste, which, by the way, that's one of those things where it's like I had to have this land war at home with my wife about buying a toothpaste that had goddamn fluoride in it. Because she was, like, bringing up, because Tom's of Maine does make a toothpaste with fluoride. But for a while, it's like I was brushing my teeth, and it was like the third or fourth night where I was like, well, this tastes really odd, and my teeth feel funny afterward. And I looked, and it was, you know, and it actually said, as though it were something to be proud of, in huge letters, no fluoride, which is like buying a food that just has, like, no nutrients inside of it.
Well, I don't think the fluoride actually makes your teeth cleaner, does it?
No, it doesn't clean your teeth, but it does, in fact, protect your teeth. The World Health Organization actually considers fluoride one of the top five greatest health advances of the 20th century, along with the polio vaccine. Now, you shouldn't be drinking buckets of it, but you shouldn't be drinking buckets of salt either. It doesn't mean it's bad for you. Goddamn hippie nonsense. So instead, this is a toothpaste, I swear to Christ, instead of fluoride. And if this is where you realize that the money is in catering to pet owners, parents, and hippies. Because you can just make endless varieties of things, and all you have to do is just get a plant and stick it into the goddamn thing, and they'll pay more for it. Because what is this? Well, it's like normal toothpaste, but it's filled with dandelions. And people, well, okay, great. This, in fact, was filled with lavender extract. Why would you want to brush your teeth with lavender?
I don't know.
There's no reason for that. So I finally, and it was purple. I mean, that should have been in the giveaway. You're brushing your teeth with something purple. So I finally got her to get rid of that, and to get the actual Toms of Maine with fluoride. So I got the Toms of Maine antiperspirant, and I put it on, and of course it doesn't work. And it's like a 45-degree day, and I'm halfway, you know, down the block to the car, and I'm just sweating like a pig. So I send, she's going to the supermarket the other night, and I'm like, hey, while you're at the supermarket, I just put something in the app. Will you check it? Just give me some regular. And I actually said, I don't know if I saved it or not, in the actual grocery application, I said, non-hippie deodorant. I put it in big parentheses. In huge, like, all caps, and brothers, get me some non-hippie antiperspirant, please, for the love of Christ. So she goes, she brings home, and Arm & Hammer makes a deodorant, which I actually use, A, because it's pretty effective, and also it's fairly cheap, and it's got, you know, baking soda, and who knows if that works or not, but it's cheap, and it does the job. So she gets me some Arm & Hammer deodorant. But, of course, she gets me the one variety of Arm & Hammer deodorant that, A, does not have aluminum in it, so it does not work, and then it's not unscented, which I also specified. It's instead clean scent. Mm. And clean in this case means smelling like a carton full of lilacs.
Yeah.
So I've got, and I think largely because I just never use like a scented deodorant, and I've switched now to this weird, like sort of crystal gazing flowery kind of thing. And so now it has this unintended side effect of like, it's like giving me this weird like underarm itch. Which is a thing that's just, and I'm not trying to be horrifying about it, it's just as you apologize for occasionally spilling food on yourself, if you look over and it looks like you're at the primate house and I'm just going, just scratching my armpit, I think because I just use the unscented thing, the fragrance is somehow like reacting with my skin or whatever.
We had an issue for a while with the deodorant at my house because I use Degree antiperspirant because I, much like you with like hair products and stuff, I figure if it's something that like says that it's got like extra chemicals in
right.
it that will like, you know, and that will magically like, you know, adjust itself to how hot I am, then, you know, yeah, great. It's going to kill my brain cells. I'm going to have Alzheimer's. But what the hell?
Sure.
I will not have sweaty armpits. So I use Degree. But the thing is, my husband, whenever it was his turn to go to the store to buy stuff and to pick up deodorant, for a good like 8 years, it was impossible for him to get it through his head that I don't use the ladies' version. I use the men's version because all of the ladies' versions smell horrible.
Right.
They have even like there's the clean scent, which yeah, it smells like the perfume they use in soap. That's, you know, it's not clean smelling. It just smells very perfuming and very floral. And then they have the ones that actually are floral. And they just all smell like some kind of horrible cheap perfume. So I use the men's sport scent because it smells kind of spicy. It smells like nutmeggy.
Right.
And that, you know, goes well with the other scents that I wear, and it doesn't smell weird and perfumey and odd. But Patrick was never able to get that through his head. He's like, here, I got you deodorant. And I'm like going, you got me ladies deodorant. And he just kind of looked at me like, but
you're a lady.
You're a lady. It's like,
here's the
don't use the ladies one.
And we have Kelly Clark on hold. We'll get to her in just one moment here. Two other observations about this. First of all, with the right woman and the right scent, I got to tell you, there's just like, and guys know this to be true, here's a universal truth. There is nothing hotter. There are a few things hotter, I'll say anyway, than a chick the next morning who's got like one of your button-up shirts on. So like, you know, guys know what I'm talking about there, where it's like a woman, she's got like the under things. I don't think we ever came up with a different word for that. Yeah. But then she's got like the white button-up shirt on over it, especially if it's something that belongs, you know, like one of yours. That's great. And not just because it means that she, you know, spent the night. It's just something about that look that's it's just quintessentially. It's got its own kind of style that can't quite be matched by anything else. Here's the other thing. If you get a woman who wears the right kind of guy's cologne, that really, really works. I used to, a friend of mine here, it was the Big Butch lesbian that fixed my brake pads that one time. She would wear Obsession for Men, and I don't think it was just because she was a Big Butch lesbian. There's just something about it, because it's like girl, because perfume made for women, it's just so, I don't want to say girly, but you know what I mean? It's so unbelievably floral and so sickly sweet in its scent that it's just really off-putting. And I'm not a guy, like, I don't really wear cologne at this point in my life. I mean, I think I own, like, half a bottle somewhere that, like, in case I ever need it, but I don't really wear cologne. But the thing about guys' cologne is it tends to be nice without, but it's understated.
Yeah, I used to wear Chanel for Men, and I started wearing it after I had read that Greta Garbo wore it.
Yeah.
And that was when I developed this sort of, I tend to skew towards things that are warm and spicy rather than things that are flowery. And I would get more compliments from men when I was wearing that than anything else I've ever worn.
Because women's perfume just tends to be really a sharp and off-putting. It just tends to be very, very, it's like, it is the olfactory equivalent of having a dessert that is just far too sweet. That's really what it is. But here's the other thing about that is, so just as you were, you know, you choose to wear men's antiperspirant, occasionally, and every guy has this happen where it's like you run out of your own antiperspirant, or you find that like your wife has just bought you some hippie nonsense that doesn't work, which by the way, is not what she buys for herself. For herself, she just buys like, you know, whatever, like the Secret or Sure or something. What is the one that's pH balance for ladies' underarms? I think it's the Strong Enough for a Man, made for whatever, yeah, a woman, with, whatever.
Yeah.
So I just end up using that. And then it's that thing where for the rest of the day, you're just walking around and you just smell like the makeup counter at Nordstrom. And you just wonder if everybody's sort of staring at you. Which is not unlike now, by the way. The reason I apologize is because the thing of having the underarm itch is it's the sort of thing that you find yourself scratching without being consciously aware that you were doing it. And you don't realize it until you're in the middle of a conversation with somebody, and then you're also kind of just doing this. And just looks like you're just mining deep inside your armpit for something. And it's just all kinds of awkward. So if I should do that at some point during the day, try not to think less of me.
I'll just pretend I don't see it.
Okay. It's not like I'm de-lousing or
something. I'll just pretend that I work with a bonobo chimp.
Thank you. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Without further ado, let's welcome now from Willamette Week, arts and culture editor and stylish woman about town, Ms. Kelly Clark. Hello, how are you on this fine Wednesday?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm feeling very good about my own underarms right now.
It's not like I'm a, you know, it's not like I'm some OCD freak when it comes to hygiene or whatever, but it's a, but I,
of
I have,
course not.
I'm just, I'm just saying I have my own. Well, because I mentioned the other day that one of the things I just cannot do, unless it is like a matter of life and death, I cannot leave the house in the morning to come to work or go anywhere important without shaving. I just, there's something, nothing will make me feel less kempt than leaving the house with like, you know, the stubble on my face or whatever. And it's the same thing.
I feel the same way about earrings.
Is that true? Like you have to have earrings on?
I have to have earrings on, or I feel nude.
And my thing is like they'll advertise. Sometimes the antiperspirant will market themselves, or they'll advertise themselves as saying like, even if you have to miss a day, and I just never believe, even if it's true. Ew. That's a thing where, because you spend the rest of the day keeping your arms by your sides, like cinched down as tight as possible, and then occasionally just like ducking into a hallway and going. And try to see if you reek and if you're offending your coworkers.
No, it's true, and you do. It's shocking to figure out how much you reek when you don't wear any perspirant. I'm just saying.
And
I am personally partial to Secret powder scent. It's the only one I will wear, and I refuse to use any that my husband. I agree with you, Dawn. Like, it's really the only one that doesn't taste like. I mean, taste. See, I use the word taste because all the other women's antiperspirants smells so strong, it's like licking them. It's disgusting. Yeah.
I just wish people who don't wear deodorant because they think, well, I can't wear antiperspirant or whatever because it's bad for you. And I wish that they would just figure out that they reek.
Yeah.
I really, because you can't tell them.
There's usually a correlation between people who say deodorant is going to give them cancer and who also don't shower at all because apparently they're afraid that water is going to give them herpes or something. I don't know.
The thing is, everybody has Everybody has, first of all, a specific person that they either had to work with, they had to sit next to on the bus, somebody you met, you know, you go on a blind date with somebody, and it's just and I understand that, you know, it's not like, again, it's like I'm some unnatural neat freak in the sense of, like, I know your body just, you know, like, generates sweat and, you know, you get grimy at the end of the day and whatever. But just because that's like a scientific fact doesn't mean I have to enjoy being next to somebody who smells like the inside of a shoe. And everybody has had a coworker or somebody who just reeked all the time. Or and once is enough, where you're exposed to that and you decide two things. One, I don't ever want to be around this person again. And two, I don't ever, ever, ever want people to be thinking about me the way I am currently thinking about this person. Because it colors your entire perception of whoever it is. And no matter how positive they may be, no matter how good looking they might be, no matter how talented or funny or charming, if they have terrible body odor, that literally and figuratively overwhelms everything else. There's just no getting around that. All right. And on that we can all agree.
So say we all.
Okay. Hey, let me ask you this, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. If I asked you if there was a bouquet made of salami in the front of your fine newspaper today, would I be incorrect about that?
Well, yes, you are correct.
Okay.
We do have an entire meat bouquet on the front cover of Willamette Week.
Is this because of the salami-gram story? Is this the thing they will actually deliver to people?
Oh, yeah, and it's a little bit different. Olympic Provisions, which is an amazing restaurant in Eastside Industrial, that's also a butcher shop. They make their own salami. It is some of the finest stuff you will ever taste in town. You should go get some right now. They're doing a singing salami-gram where a man will come to your house and present you with a bouquet of salami and then sing to you.
That's fantastic.
Which, it's kind of the best idea that I have ever heard in my life. I've been obsessed with this since I heard about it last week, and so I wrote about it on the site, and then we needed, you know, we're not very good at Valentine's Day. We all kind of, I don't know, we kind of hate Valentine's Day, but the idea of putting a meat bouquet on the cover made us really happy, and so they tarted it up for us a little bit, you know, because obviously the salamis are wrapped for your enjoyment when they come to your house, but we had them unwrap them, and then they got into it and sort of made us some bacon flowers, and we decorated it with cilantro, and there's like a big honking sausage that looks wholly inappropriate, kind of peeking out the side. It's really the most glorious thing we've had on our cover in months, I have to tell you.
The best part is the caption. So on the front, there's a male hand, there's a man's hand on the front cover, and just holding this huge concoction of meat, and it just says in huge, big caps letters, it says, "Here, we bought you this meat bouquet." And there's something about – I was making this punctuation observation to my wife because I'm just that exciting to have around the house. I was talking about the evolution of American punctuation and in the internet era, and she was doing that thing where her eyes glaze over and she wonders about the many, many marriage opportunities that she passed over so she could be with me for what must be some sort of penance. But I was saying that there has been this evolution, and I think largely because of lolcat-type memes on the internet, where I find things much funnier now if they are sans period. If it's a statement with no period at the end, it becomes funnier to me for some reason. And I don't know why that is. But the, "Here, we bought you this meat bouquet," and then there's no period, that's really what sells it, is the lack of punctuation at the end. Let me ask you a question.
See, for me, it was the use of this instead of A. We went back and forth between this and A. Actually, I didn't even know this was my headline for this, which I just tossed off yesterday while I was tired because it just kept making me laugh. And usually, you know, headlines go through three or four iterations. We change them a bunch. And either people were too lazy or it was just so genius that it actually made it to the cover, which is my finest moment. But for me, it was this. We didn't buy you a meat bouquet. It was this meat bouquet specifically, as if there were other meat bouquets on the market somewhere that you could go and get at your leisure.
Well, and also, you were really right that this is funnier than A in this case here. And also, because it sounds more like a thing that a guy would actually say if he were presenting this to you. It's a and also like in the Judd Apatow comedy that is My Mind, where he goes, "And I got you this meat bouquet." That's the way that it would be delivered.
I'm telling you, you know what? They're still doing this. You can just, if you Google Olympic Provisions, if you go to our site, then you can just call them up. They are doing this. It's a singing telegram. It's a local musician that's singing you a song. And it's $75, which sounds like a lot until you realize you're getting a free, like, one-person custom performance, plus you're getting 5 to 6 wrapped salamis, which each salami is like $7 or $8, you know, by itself when you go to Olympic Provisions. Like, I don't care. This is actually an equal opportunity gift. Like, man or woman, there is nothing better to get this year than your own meat bouquet. I can't stress this enough. For a crappy holiday that really, this is redeeming Valentine's Day for me. It's making me believe in love again.
Let me ask you guys this, both of you. And this is a thing that you guys will probably know, and I don't. I guess I could look it up. But what makes something, this sounds dumb, but what makes something salami? Is it from a specific country? I mean, not necessarily made there, but I mean, is it the...
It's the technique that makes it. Salami is cured. So it's a sausage that is essentially already cooked for you by a curing method. It's dried and cured.
Yeah, it's dried and sat out for months and hardened, and it's usually a dried, hardened sausage.
Okay, so it is the method by which it is made.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and usually, I mean, it's usually an Italian. I mean, Italian is the country that's usually thought of with salamis, but you can have salamis from other. There's Greek salamis that they make there. They're really good. All sorts of good stuff. You can use it with sausage interchangeably because there's dry cured, air cured sausages, and nobody's going to look at you weird. I mean, no one's going to freak out at you. The kind of people who like salami, if you're already asking a question about that, they're already half in love with you for caring.
See, this is
so
one of those
deeply about cured meats.
It was like one of those things when I was wrenching the other day that I was having trunk pizza. There was this moment, I guess, like 2-3 weeks ago, where Lara was coming home and we were trying to eat. You know, we'd made this sort of not like a New Year's resolution, but we were just sort of we'd fallen into this thing of having pizza basically like every other night, and so we had decided we were not going to do that. We were gonna hold ourselves to, like, this is what counts as self-control in our house. We're going to hold ourselves to one pizza a week. But of course, the instant she went out of town for the day to visit some friends, I'm like on the phone to the pizza place, going to American Dream, going, can you order? Can you deliver now? Can you get it here within the next half an hour? And then she came home unexpectedly, and so I had to like hide the pizza in the trunk of my car. And so then I was actually just going out to the car. Honey, I have to go check on the petunias. And so I would like have to go out. And it was like bringing it to work, and it was still in the trunk of my car. And so Sarah was, of course, horrified because she, you know, if you leave anything out on the counter for like 5 minutes, she thinks that somehow it's just filled with disease.
Yeah, germ.
But
yes.
This is my thing. Whenever I talk about like eating pizza out of the back seat of my car or whatever, and people are horrified, I always mention that, like, you go to any deli and there's just like a bunch of cheese and meat hanging in the window for like 3 weeks. I mean, and you know, people eat that and they don't die, right? It's the same thing.
Well, they're hanging in the window after they've been fully cured in like a humidity, like a carefully controlled area where they control the temperature and humidity for months.
Oh.
And there's a rind or a casing.
They have to harden up. Yeah, they have to harden up to that point before they let them just chuck them out in the window. But, you know, after that point, you're right. They just sit out forever. But during the process where they're curing, you know, air cooking, what have you, they keep a pretty good handle on those conditions. Then again, I don't agree with Sarah. You should be able to eat pizza wherever you want, especially your trunk, and I see nothing wrong with that. I eat things that are out on my counters. I am disgusting, so I agree with you when it comes to trunk pizza. And that sounds really good right now.
I was just gonna...
I'm eating grape nuts, and that's not nearly as good as trunk pizza.
Why are you eating grape nuts? Is this a thing that you have to do because you're with child, or is this a thing you enjoy?
No, it's because that's what I had at work, and I just got back from yoga, and it I don't know. They sound good. See, I love cereal, so.
I like cereal, too, but grape
nuts
is not
I don't really like to eat cereal for breakfast. I like to eat it for lunch or for dessert.
Look, don't get me wrong. I love cereal. I could eat cereal like a lot of people. I could eat cereal 3 meals a day, 7 days a week. Grape nuts seems like less a cereal than a spackling or grouting product.
That's because you're not putting enough honey in it. You have to actually make it congeal into, like, little balls of grape nut goodness that's attached by coagulated, just, you know, honey.
Yeah, I love.
It's really
I love
just
grape nuts.
It's really you just kind of roll the honey in the grape nuts and then put some milk on it. That's really the way I eat it.
Well,
and also, I mean, all I've been doing is stuffing my face with McDonald's. That's what I eat now that I'm pregnant is McDonald's, you know, cheeseburgers and fries.
Okay, let me just
because my child deserves the best.
I was going to ask you. Just we've known each other long enough. I can ask you this question: Is being pregnant sort of a buy for just you know? Because sometimes, I mean, I know that there are, you know, all the hormonal changes and whatever, and you get the strange cravings for food. But I mean, even if that's not actually the case at that particular moment, is it just sort of like a get out of jail free card? Because you can just eat whatever you want and go like, it's hormones. That's why I'm eating.
Not only can you eat whatever you want, apparently you can also say whatever you want, do whatever you want, forget anything you want, mess up on anything you want, and nobody will ever do anything mean to you. It's you're like in a grace period for 9 months where you can do no wrong. It's hilarious.
Excellent. Hey,
it's bizarre.
Do people do that creepy thing of thinking they can touch your stomach, and do you punch them?
I used to. In fact, I told one of my friends that if she touched my stomach one more time, I would punch her in the throat.
Okay.
And that actually happened. But I was a lot more vigilant about the no stomach touching when I was in the earlier months when you couldn't see it, because it was just people coming up, and it's basically like they're groping your chest, but they're groping your stomach. I mean, you don't really feel any dirt. It's just, it's creepy and invasive and slightly sexual. Once you have a stomach that is literally the size of a small watermelon, it ceases to be sexual, and people, they just can't help themselves. They like, they just get this weird glazed look in their eyes, and their hands just travel toward it. It's, and you know, at that point, you know, you're already so out of it, you don't really care.
Okay, I'd like,
so,
by the way, just...
I slapped a man's hand away, I punched somebody in the arm, and I slapped somebody up against the head. So, yes, there, I have done violence to people for touching me, but... not so much lately.
And so you will note, by the way, that it at no point did Rick Emerson ever engage in any of that touching behavior. It's not a thing Rick Emerson does.
No. You are properly terrified of the entire birth experience.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the way I like my men. Yes.
Hey, in the new issue of Well, I'm a Week, by the way, you've got there's a story about Craigslist missed connections. So people who are actually people put something like, you know, guy in yellow parka who was ahead of me at Safeway buying a gallon of Ben & Jerry's. Please to contact me. And that's the thing where it's like those are fascinating and interesting, but they're also kind of depressing. And my wife and I have talked about this a lot. This is one of the very first conversations we ever had about in Salt Lake, whatever the weekly paper there had, the sort of, you know, the I missed you or I saw you section. And they were sweet and romantic, but also just terribly sad, because you knew that the odds were like 5 billion to 1 that the person would ever reconnect with whoever they were placing the ad for. So did you guys actually track down people who had done this?
We actually found a couple. There was one guy who usually, and this happened quite often, it wasn't the person themselves who found it, but a friend of theirs. So like this one guy named Christopher found an ad that it was clearly his best friend who he had been at a show with at a Valentine's. And so he connected his friend in this I saw you or this misconnection. And the pair of gay men went out. They had coffee actually at Valentine's again. You know, they said, both of them said that it made them feel great that somebody actually went out of their way to do something like that. They didn't end up together, but they thought it was pretty amazing. Most of the time, you know, it's people who they just can't work up the gumption or the effort to really get out of their comfort zone, but they want to throw it out to the universe that they at least tried, you know. May have been a half-assed attempt, but they at least did the half-assed attempt.
So it's almost like it's somewhere between actually contacting the person and doing one of those post-secret things where you're just confessing it to the universe, like, anonymously.
Yeah, and it made me really sad because Christina, the woman who wrote this, she had one example of someone she wished she could find. It was a woman in the Lloyd Center neighborhood who ran after the guy with the, quote, sexy beard and hot cat vest. And I even asked her, I was like, can you try to find these people? She's like, I did, and it didn't work out. Just like, I want to know what a hot cat vest is.
What I was going to ask if there was any further explanation given as to what a hot cat vest was.
No, that's a direct quote from her missed connection, is that this man was wearing a hot cat vest, which I don't know if it means that he was wearing some sort of, like, vest that had a fake fur on it that was cat-like, or if it was cat print, or in any case, none of those things sound hot to me. But then again, I'm not placing a misconnection.
Well, and
I'm
also because you got to imagine if that is sort of hot to you, then that really is a missed opportunity, because that's a niche that contains very few people, I would imagine. And so if you see the guy in the hot cat vest and you're the sort of person who's into that, there really are only two of you on the planet. Let's be honest. So.
But some of these were really sweet. I mean, there was this guy who goes to Dutch Brothers Coffee by the Morrison Bridge every day. And, yeah, he goes for coffee because he's addicted, but also he goes because he thinks the guy who's the barista is really adorable. And they have a good rapport. They ask each other about their day, what they're doing this weekend. And he finally put a misconnection in for the barista because he didn't know if he was gay or not, and he didn't want to embarrass him.
Right.
And he didn't know if his gaydar was completely off. And he's like, well, if it was meant to be, I'll throw it out to the universe, you know, and this guy will read it. And, you know, it wasn't one of those things that he was so obsessed with the man that he had to, you know, he wasn't willing to, you know, go past the boundaries they'd set as barista and coffee addict. But he was willing to just throw it out there to see what would happen. And that's what we found with this. And what was really bizarre is that apparently they did I Saw You ads in, like, the 1800s. Like, this has been going on forever, that people are just too wimpy to talk to one another.
Where was, like, thou wert shoeing a horse at the corner of...
No, I've got one, yeah. On Wednesday afternoon, a lady with a black silk hat walked near side by side with a gentleman in a drab overcoat. Both were annoyed by wind and dust. Her smile has haunted him ever since. Will she send her address to Carl Union Square Post Office?
That's fantastic. That is...
And, yeah, that's from 1861.
That's great. Well, that reminds me of this story. I mean, speaking of stuff like you were talking about how these are sweet and sad all at once. There's this story, which may be apocryphal, but which I have heard many, many times, which is, you know, in the Peanuts comic strip, how Charlie Brown is obsessed with a little red-haired girl that you never see and who's never depicted, never shown. But the story that I've heard many times is that Charles Schulz lived across the street from a family that was moving out just as his family was moving in, and they had a little redheaded daughter. And he was however old, he was like 9 or 10, and he only ever saw her the one day because they were moving out the day that his family was moving into their home, and he never saw her after that day, never saw her again, but was sort of in love with her for the rest of his life. And that's why Charlie Brown has such a crush on the little red-haired girl, because it was this girl that Charles Schulz saw once when he was a little boy. And I've just always, that is just... And that's one of the, I don't even care if it's not true. It's just, I love stuff like that. I'm a huge sucker for those stories.
That's pretty awesome.
Let's all hug. All right. Kelly Clark can be read in Willamette Week in print, online at weweek.com, and feared always. And so enjoy your grape nuts and honey and whatever else you're rolling, and oats or whatever it is you're rolling those in.
Will.
Is it, let me ask you this, do you put milk on them? Because then they become all cementy.
Yeah, no, but you have to eat them quickly.
Yeah,
which I actually stopped eating them so I could talk to you. This is how much I care about the Rick Emerson radio program, is I stopped eating my grape nuts. They're going to be all cementy and weird when I get back, but that's okay.
The honey and cold milk thing is a very specific thing. That's the only way I can eat Cheerios. And I had friends when I was a kid. I'd go over to their house and they put honey on all their breakfast cereal, which I didn't do at home. And that's how I learned that you drizzle the honey over to the Cheerios. So you try to get as much like mass covered with honey. Then you pour the cold milk on it and it all hardens up on the Cheerios.
I don't really believe in cereal with sugar. It's really not the superior way to eat cereal. I don't really eat sugared cereals because I wasn't allowed them as a kid, but I was allowed to put as much sugar or honey as I wanted on them, which kind of defeats the purpose. So I've just got a thing, like, I want plain cornflakes or plain Cheerios or plain grape nuts with just a ton of honey on them. I hope people are, I hope somebody who is like a sugar fiend tries this now, because it's going to blow their mind.
Okay, here's the thing. The final thought, and we'll let you get back to your day. The final thought is occasionally we will do these crossover shows with Sarah and Greg where they'll be snack or food oriented. And it's usually like trashy stuff. Like each of us will have to bring like two bags of like bizarre potato chips or like something from the Safeway deli counter or whatever. But you know what we ought to do? We ought to do like a cereal thing where each of us has to bring like a box of cereal. It doesn't have to be necessarily strange or bizarre, but I mean just a box of cereal that we find to be fantastic. Because that's, I'm telling you, cereal is the great, it's a bonder. It is a great unifier among all peoples. All right, we'll put that on the, and we'll invite you to that. We'll put you on the guest list for that.
That sounds exciting. Right. Thank you so much.
Kelly Clark, arts and culture editor from Willamette Week. Enjoy your day. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
That is Kelly Clark, ladies and gentlefolk. All right, awesome. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hi.
All right, well, we should do this. We'll let everybody use the facilities.
Okay.
And then we'll come
is
back
that
on the other side.
You?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Hick Watch coming up, also Democracy in the March, top five, clue number three for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest, and more. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay right there, go nowhere. We will return momentarily.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Next trick, I'll need a volunteer. can pull it out, but I can't put it back. I can make love and disappear. For my next trip, I'll need a volunteer. Step right up. For my next trip, I'll need a volunteer. For my next trip, I'll need a volunteer. Step right up. For my next trip, I'll need a volunteer. It's lonely up here when the tricks have been played and the spotlight has faded and the plans that we made have fallen apart. It's lonely as hell and there's no magic spell for a broken heart. Put me in chains and I will escape. Better not wait up, 'cause I might be late. I can make love or disappear. For my next trick, tricks have been played and the spotlight has faded and the plans that we made have fallen apart. It's lonely as hell and there's no magic spell for a broken heart. I can saw a woman in two, but you won't want to look in the box when I'm through. I can make love will disappear. For my next trick, I'll need a volunteer. Step right up. For my next trick, I'll need a volunteer. For my next trick, I'll need a volunteer. Step right up. For my next trick, I'll need a volunteer.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you by, among other folks, the fine people at Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com, or call 503-252-1609. Now, whenever I see you holding your iPhone, I think you're putting on that Rosary app, which apparently already exists.
No, I am not.
Okay. What are you doing? It doesn't really matter. I'm just curious.
I'm playing Crank.
Really? What is Crank?
It's a trivia game. And you play once a day, and it's all public. It's all, you would probably enjoy it very much.
Are you playing against other folks?
Other people that you know who are on the iPhone or on Facebook.
Is it like Word Feud or whatever, trivia?
Yeah, and it's just basically you get a number of points, and then it shows you how you're ranked among all the other people you know. But the thing is, it's all...
Sounds angering.
It's all current events and arts and literature and things like that. There are some sports questions, but not very many.
Do they know who you are? In other words, are you playing against like people you know and they go, oh, that's Dawn?
Oh, yes.
Really? Could you be undercover? Could you sign in as like, you know...
I don't know.
Ramrod?
Maybe. I don't know, but that's part of the fun, though, is to look at it and go, ha-ha, Fat Boy Roberts, I'm smarter than you are.
See, you say that's part of the fun, but I can't go to trivia nights, so I probably can't play this, because I just take it too seriously.
And it's also, the questions are all fairly random, so it's, you know, if you read the news that day and you kept up, or it might just be things you don't know about, some days I will play and I will be, like, number one or number two among all the people I know. Some days I'll be, like, number 14.
I automatically... put that in the pile of things I probably can't do, because I would become really testy, and then everybody else would become really upset at me because it's like I don't care about it, and yet I care about it way too much all at once. This is like,
so the next time you saw them, you'd be like, stupid Crank.
Well, it's like with crossword puzzles. Like, did you ever do this where somebody will put a crossword puzzle? You know, they'll be doing a crossword puzzle and they'll say, "Hey, what's five letter word for fetid?" And you're like, fetid. And they go, no, a different five-letter word for fetid. And you go, I don't know. And they go, well, I'm doing this. Okay, but the third letter, I think, is a T. And you're going, I don't – give it to me. And I'll just go over and I'll grab the paper from them.
And then I will just sit there and I'll like, and suddenly it's like I'm invested in getting the answer and then getting the rest of the crossword puzzle done, even though I'm hating it, hating every moment of it.
It sounds like the problem is really just that you're mean.
It's not that I'm, no, see, well, yes. That
I mean, from that story.
It is that. But I guess my point is that if I am asked to help with or contribute to a crossword puzzle, it's like I dislike the entire thing. But once I start, it's like then I just feel like I am so over-competitive with everything.
Oh.
That once I start with a crossword puzzle, even though I'm competing with no one, it's not even like I'm competing with the other person. It's like I'm competing with the newsprint itself, with the guy who created it at the New York Times. I'll just sit there and then I will become just obsessed with solving the crossword puzzle, but not even in a way that people like find enjoyable, because at the end I'm just angry.
Well, I know on my birthday last year, you were getting very angry over playing apples to apples, and that's a game where there aren't even any actual right answers.
Well, which is no, but see that in and of itself is just, that's just, that is just seeds for bitterness if you're me, where there's no right or wrong answer, because then it's like you're going to one of Portland's goddamn trivia nights where they go, well, we'll give you half credit for that because it's kind of right. There is no kind of right. So I just, but it's like once I get on the tracks of the crossword puzzle, I am just so hyper competitive, like all out of proportion, that I feel like I gotta like work until the thing is solved, which you can never do, by the way. No one ever finishes the New York Times crossword puzzle or even the Oregonian crossword puzzle, which I don't think comes from the New York Times.
I do.
Really?
Yeah.
See, maybe you're the exception to that, because it just seems like one of those things that, like, you know, there's always like two left. And you're going, well, if it wasn't for this nine across, I'd have it solved. And then I'm just, you know, then I've got the irritation and annoyance of having wasted my time on something I don't care about. Then I've got the irritation and annoyance that I couldn't actually finish it. And then it's all hyper-focused like this inverted pyramid on nine across, which is always like some goddamn sports clue, as though there's any way in the name of Christ I'll ever be able to figure that out. Why were we just talking about that?
Because you asked me what I was doing on the
So that's what I probably can't do. Oh, but here's the other thing about that. Squires Electric. Here's the other thing about the trivia game, the other reason I can't do it. Have you been on an airplane where they've got the in airplane trivia?
Yeah.
And so you're playing against the other passengers?
Yeah.
And so Laura and I, we flew to, I think it's when we flew to New York the last time or whatever, and it's like on the seat back screen in front of you. It's like you can either watch Rise of the Silver Surfer for the 50th time, or you can play trivia against your plane mates. And of course, you know, Lara's like, well, let's do that. And she hits, you know, and I'm like, no. And she hits start. And it's like once she hits start, then it's just like it's like a train with no brakes. Then it's like we're committed. And I'm like, fine, we're going to, okay. And I get myself in.
Does it identify people by their seat numbers
yes,
then? So
yes,
you know who these people are.
Yeah, we're like,
that bastard in 7D.
Exactly.
Hate him.
And it actually will show a seating diagram, and they'll go like, you know, scoreboard leader, ding, 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 and it shows the seat blinking, and it says, like, yeah, like 7B, and then it'll show, like, so, like, it's up there and to the left or whatever. So then once it starts, then it's like I just feel myself getting into, like, you know, then it's like, then you're into, you know, play mode, you're the competition mode, and I, you know, switch on, and then I'm all hyper-focused on it, and I'm, you know, batting her hand away because she's too slow and going for the wrong answer, and I'm like, and I'm doing and it's a touch screen. So I'm you know, I'm running the risk of breaking the screen because I'll see the answer, bam, and I try to hit the thing as hard and as fast as possible. Anyway, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, I play it. Patrick likes to help, and I've been mean to him with the crank. If there's one game a day, there's something like, I think, 15 or 20 questions, and that's it. You only play the one game per day, and then it's 24 hours till there's another game that you can play. So, and the thing is, Patrick will want to help me, and he'll let me see, and I'll be like, no, you can't.
Don't touch it.
The questions are timed. Because the thing is, if you take too long to answer the questions,
right,
you get less points.
Right.
So I'm like, no, I can't ask. I can't. Well, tell me what they're asking. I don't have time. I can't.
So
wait.
The thing on the plane.
Then I'm going, I'm such a bitch.
Well, especially because it's like it's a stupid online trivia game. Like, who cares? Just like the plane thing is the same way. Where there's a little like circle that elapses, and it's like the faster you answer, you know, the more points you get. And it's like, it's not like I'm winning anything. Not like giving me freaking flyer miles or something for it. It's just so I can be better than some schlub in 7B. Who cares? And so it's like, if I don't win, then I just spend the rest of the flight being pissed off and angry at that guy and myself. If I do win, then it's just stressful because then I've got to maintain my lead. So I think we finally got to the point where I won two games in a row on this Delta flight, and then I was like, I was retiring. I'm like, I'm going out of the top of my game. I got to quit now. And so I could just, I don't think I should ever install whatever that game is. Crank. I'm not going to do that. So just FYI.
It's Crank with a Q. What, for when you're not installing it.
What do you mean with it? With a Q?
It's spelled Q-R-A-N-K. Crank.
Q-U-R-A?
No, Q-R-A-N-K.
Okay. Well, in any event, SquiresElectric.com is just like that. Find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com or call 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Wiring of any sort in your home, in your abode, in your workplace, electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, your office intercom system, or any of the other billion things in your home or office that are run by wiring. It's not really it really is a series of tubes. It's just the wires are the tubes. That's kind of what it is. It's
they're tubes, but they have wires in them.
That's right. They're wired tubes. I should just send them money for this commercial. I should just cut them a check. Sorry. 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And they tolerate things like this. So, I mean, really, I mean, they're good people. You can tell. SquiresElectric.com. Please tell me you heard it here. SquiresElectric.com.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget, coming up later on today, and by later on today, I mean 4 o'clock Pacific time on Wednesday, you can hear Don Taylor at Cascadia.fm on Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby Fatboy Roberts of the Court and Fatboy Show, and also later on at HamFistedRadio.com. Isn't that right, Don?
That's right.
What's coming up on today's program?
No, we're just going to talk about stuff.
Is it pointless of me to ever ask that question again?
No, that's not true. Sometimes we have guests, and sometimes it's just mostly... You know, we sit down without any firm plan for what we're going to talk about. We take questions that people ask us on the text box. A lot of times we just we start talking about a current movie that's just come out or something that has happened recently and just sort of freeform it for an hour. And we end up spending a lot of time talking about movies, go figure. But we talk about a lot of other stuff, too.
You know, I never did tell you that I got caught up on my movie watching last weekend. Or was it now 5 weekends ago? And that doesn't really matter at this point because the thing I wrote down to talk about like forever ago. But I wanted to tell you that I saw both back-to-back. I saw Winter's Bone and The King's Speech.
I have to sadly admit that I couldn't get through Winter's Bone. And I think it's just because I just couldn't get into the right mental place for it.
But what do you mean? It was just not the kind of movie you were into that night, you just found it off-putting?
It was just really grim, and I just was not mentally in a place where I could deal with those people and their problems.
Yeah, it was. It's a movie that I got about.
I mean, it's very good. Don't get me wrong, and the acting is amazing. The girl who plays the lead,
right.
I think, is really amazing.
I forget her name, but she was on. She was on the Bill Engvall show, like a terrible sitcom from that blue-collar comedy guy. And that's the only thing I'd ever seen her on. And she's actually really, really good.
Yeah.
Lara liked it more than I did. It's not that I disliked it. I mean, I give it, as they say, a thumbs up. But it was – I would have liked to have seen – I mean, I won't spoil anything for you, but I will say Winter's Bone, which is it is about a girl. Is she in Kentucky or
yeah, I think
some
it's Kentucky,
damn Ozarky
yeah.
place? She's in the Appalachians, so she's in the Appalachians, and she's basically got to track down her father who skipped his bail. Otherwise, she's going to lose her home, and so it's basically this travelogue, through like a bunch of meth addicted hillbilly wasteland, and the only thing that I would have liked to have seen more about the day to day life. Of what it's like to live in that environment. Another, that's not like that would be any cheerier, but I'm saying if we're already in that environment, it was the only problem I have with the movie is it seemed like a series of snapshots, and I really would have preferred to have had a more overarching view of life there, but that's not the movie they chose to make. So, but it was well done. I had no problem with it. The music I thought was really great. The cinematography was great, although you suspect, and apparently it did not take a lot of augmentation to the production design. Apparently that place just sort of looks like that all the time because there are abandoned meth works everywhere.
Everything's gray and smoky and falling apart.
Yeah, and they said everywhere they went to film there was like abandoned, burned out meth labs because that's the thing is it's just like this sort of ongoing like pick it up and move it and pick it up and move it.
But there are a number of people in that movie that are local that were like non-professional actors that they brought in for local color. And it, what I've seen of it, it's really actually very good. It's just that, you know, sometimes you're just not in a place where you can deal with meth addicted hillbillies.
Yeah, it was good. I didn't I expected it to be kind of a different movie than it was, so I had to adjust my expectations as we got into it. But it was good. I would recommend it. And then I won't even say he's the lead bad. There really are no good or bad guys. It's sort of where everybody is sort of a grayscale character. But one of the prime characters is played by Kenny Powers' brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that guy's name. But he's like a big Ichabod Crane looking guy.
Yeah.
And he plays the character's uncle. And he's actually really good and very like scarily believable. And then I saw King's Speech, which
I believe that we actually gave him the Best Supporting Actor award for the Portland Film Critics, the Far From Hollywood.
He was great.
Film.
He was really, really good. I was a big fan of him in that film. Again, the film itself was good. But
John Hawks.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
But you are right, though, where it's like you get about 5 minutes into that and you go, oh, it's going to be one of these. Okay. And you just like have to batten down your emotional hatches because you know it's just going to be terrible. You know, and I will also say this because I had somebody email me and they said they got about 10 minutes into the film and they quit watching because – and this isn't a spoiler, really. But they said they got about 10 minutes into the film. And again, it's just these poor like methed out hillbillies in the Appalachians. And in the first 10 minutes of the film – you see that the family owns like an adorable dog, and then also like one of the children comes home with another adorable like, look, I found a puppy. And this guy emailed me and he's like, I can take things happening to meth addicted hillbillies. He's like, but if something is going to happen to the puppy that has the bad luck to be born to meth addicted, he's like, I don't want to see that. And so I will actually just tell you, nothing bad happens to the puppy.
That's good.
So the dogs.
Because I had that thought too. I was like, oh no. Really?
That was my thing too. I'm like, oh, here we go. We're introducing the thing that they're going to kill later. Except for the fact that they have the dumb luck to be in Kentucky. Nothing bad happens to the dogs. In any event.
You saw King's Speech.
King's Speech, which I give sort of a nah.
I really liked it, although it is
very
by the numbers.
It seemed very like, and here's the guy that has the crippling problem he has to overcome, and here's the shrink who pushes through to his childhood issues, and they're British, and it'll get an Oscar.
Yeah, and I mean, I really found it very entertaining, but it really is written to that template. I mean, there's that point, you know, at the beginning, the top of Act 3, where, you know, Jeffrey Rush and Colin Firth, even though they have this really great working relationship, now they have to have a fight.
Falling out, yeah.
And they have a falling out over absolutely nothing. And the whole thing just obviously was engineered by the script so that you can have that scene, you know, towards the end of the third act where Jeffrey Rush shows up and Colin Firth gives him that look and it's like, yes, now we're pals again and your heart can swell. And it was like, but they didn't even have any reason to argue
just
with each other.
It was just the script needed them to be apart so they could bring them together. It wasn't a bad movie.
No, I found it very, very entertaining, but I certainly I can't say that it was like one of the best movies I've ever seen.
No,
or that it's even,
I think it's –
or even the Colin Firth, you know, really – deserves all the accolades he's getting for the acting.
But you know why, though? It's because he's a guy who's not handicapped or enfeebled playing a guy who's handicapped.
And he didn't go full retard.
That's the thing. It's like you never go full retard, Don. That's the thing. He's a good-looking guy who can speak well playing a guy who, you know, he's still good-looking because he's Colin Firth, but he's a guy who has some sort of an ailment, in this case, a speech impediment, which...
that he overcomes.
Admittedly is exacerbated by the fact that he's going to be king and has to give a radio address in a time when that was still a new technology and whatever, and so I get that, but it is very much the whole, like, where Jeffrey Rush is the shrink who, like, wants him to face his personal demons and he doesn't want to, and then, then there's the breakthrough where, tell me about your father. And it was a solidly put together film, but I do think it is getting a disproportionate amount of praise for all the reasons that movies with those elements do.
Oh yeah, costumes, soaring soundtrack. You know, guy has the speech impediment, he overcomes the obstacles. Everyone's British. Helena Bonham Carter's in it.
Well, yeah.
So it's like just rubber stamp Oscar on the front of it.
And as you said, it is the costume design and the fact that it's like a period piece and in a different country, and so it's got all of the sort of productions going on. And it's like, and not to knock her, but it's like at the Charlize Theron element too of like, you know, person who's flawless playing someone who's not flawless. Mm-hmm. I give it a whatever. My whole thing is, this is going to be a spoiler, so if you haven't seen King's Speech, and it's not much of a spoiler, because here's the thing, you already know how it ends. 5 minutes in, you know how it ends.
Yeah, and it was history. It actually happened.
It's a real thing. I guess if you
Titanic,
don't...
Titanic, the boat sinks.
If you don't want to know the non-surprising ending, I guess you tune out for like the next 60 seconds, I would say. But, you know, my thing is at the end, like, he's, you know, he shows up, and for reasons that are never really adequately explained in the script anyway, he's suddenly able to just, like, give – he's suddenly able to follow the advice that he could have followed, like, 5 minutes into the first meeting with the guy. My thing is the whole time I'm just going, just put the headphones on him again. Just put the headphones on him again. Put the headphones on him again. Like, if that's the whole thing, is like, if the whole deal basically is he's got to get through this one big speech, because then he's got the rest of
and
his...
And nobody's looking at him.
Right. Nobody can see him. He's got the rest of his, whatever you call it, kingdom or his monarchdom, his period as king, to work on, like, work on the rest of it later. The whole movie is centered on that he's got to do the king's speech, which, of course, is not just the way he talked, but there's literally one speech to the country about going to war. That's the whole thing he's got to get through.
Yeah.
And I'm like... You're in a room where no one can see you. Put the headphones on him. And then they just don't for some reason, because that would just be too easy.
Yeah.
So, you know. Anyway, I don't mean to sound like I hated the film. I didn't. I think I expected it to be less rote than it was.
The important thing is, did you see Toy Story 3 yet?
No, but I have it sitting at home.
Okay.
And here's the only reason I haven't watched it yet is because Lara asked me to wait and watch it with her.
Have you seen Inception?
No.
You got to see Inception.
I know. They're just sitting there. They're both sitting there.
Okay.
And it's like, but you know how it is.
I know.
Every time I'm like, because if I were to do it, baby, I watch Toy Story 3, and she'd be like, I told you to wait for me. You know, but it's like with her work schedule, it's like I just get, but I have no choice. So I just have to wait until she's, you know, able to do it. So we watched Duel, which I guess I could have watched Toy Story 3 instead, but we watched Duel. Let's do some of that news.
Okay.
All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A former Indiana mayor who won four terms in the 1930s and 1950s is proving less popular with modern-day city leaders who say they probably won't name a new government center for him because of the jokes his name could inspire. Harry Balls is a runaway favorite in online voting to name the new building in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Oh, good times.
Balls was spelled B-A-A-L-S, two A's. The new center would be 120 miles northeast of Indianapolis. But Deputy Mayor Beth Malloy said that probably that won't be enough, just the popularity in the online voting, to put the name of the city's longest tenured mayor on the center. The issue is pronunciation. The former mayor did pronounce his last name Balls. His descendants have since changed it to Bales.
You know, this is the sort of thing that online voting was made for, really. This sort of issue. Good God almighty. So they've changed it to Bales?
Yeah.
Because it's better to be named after a golden calf, I suppose, than a guy's area. Which, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Opponents fear that naming the center after Balls would make Fort Wayne the target of late-night television voice. Malloy said Tuesday in a statement, "We realize that while Harry Balls was a respected mayor, not everyone outside of Fort Wayne will know that. We wanted to pick something that would reflect our pride in our community beyond the boundaries of Fort Wayne."
Wow. Well, this is like when we've talked about this, I think, just the other day, actually, the whole business of, like, you know, Blue Balls, Pennsylvania or something. And it's like there must have been even then some sense that, like, this might not be a thing that you want to call something. But, you know, I would say they're missing out on maybe not tourism dollars, but don't you think they're missing out on merchandising opportunities here?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a T-shirt store that you won't be able to keep things in stock there.
Well, kind of in sort of a related story, someone sent me this last week. In Austin, Texas, they're looking for a new name for their solid waste services department. So they did pretty much the same thing that they did here in Fort Wayne. Austin put a thing up on their government website saying, you know, they wanted people to nominate names for the solid waste department, and then people could vote on it. And so this being Austin, Texas, among the many names that were proposed and being voted on were things like Ministry of Filth, Department of Neat and Clean, Keep Austin Wasted. But the name that was winning by a huge margin, like these other things got like maybe 10, 11, 12 votes. This had like 5,000 votes, was the Fred Durst Society of the Humanities and Arts.
That's amazing. See, that's golden. That's glorious. But see, they probably won't go with it.
No, they probably won't use it. But the
no
thing
sense
is,
of humor.
They should be forced to because
the
they,
will of the people.
They're the ones that did this.
They made it an online.
Right.
They gave people the chance to vote.
Yes.
That is so great. That see, I would never have guessed that. Like from the first of the three runners up you named, I never. In a million years, I never would have thought that it was going to be called ever. Even if you give, no matter how many clues you'd given me, I never would have come up with that. That's wonderful. That's amazing. That's great. Well, that's like the thing about the them rejecting the statue of a RoboCop in Detroit.
I know.
It's like don't you get the sense, and I know that it sounds a little juvenile, but I mean, don't you get the sense that it's not like I'm you know, like one of the kids anymore, but don't you get the sense that there is just a whole element of the power structure or whatever you want to call this, they're people who are just so far removed from day-to-day life that they just don't get how legitimately beneficial things would be. I got to tell you, no lie, putting a huge statue of RoboCop, that's money in the bank. I mean, that's an actual – that would have an actual real demonstrable effect on Detroit's bottom line.
Yeah.
I'd go there. I mean, that's probably the only thing at this point that would get me to get on a plane and go to Detroit is to see a huge RoboCop statue. just like the hairy balls thing. I mean, how many, you know, like what is it going to benefit them to name it, to name it something else? Nothing.
So people will giggle about it. But you know something? People will be talking about Fort Wayne, Indiana. People will come to Fort Wayne, Indiana to stand and pose for a picture in front of the hairy balls Civic Center.
Everybody you know has a sign.
People will buy T-shirts and wear them.
Exactly. Everybody you know has a sticker on their fridge, it says, like, I went to Intercourse, Pennsylvania, or whatever. And it's like, you know what? That's a sticker you wouldn't have sold if it was just called, like, Tucksville or something. So, all right. I did that. What is it again? The Fred Durst?
The Fred Durst Society of the Humanities and Arts.
Fred Durst should offer to show up and, like, and just perform. He should offer to just go there and just do, like, a giant free concert for everybody. Limp Bizkit should offer to reform and to play, like, a free concert for the entire city. And to give the money to a charity of their a charity of their choice if people wish to donate, just so he can further that. Because, you know, that's the country I want to live in. A country where the townspeople, where is this?
Austin, Texas.
The townspeople of Austin and Fred Durst can come together for sewage treatment and the children,
exactly.
Let's say. God damn, that's great. That's wonderful. All right. Why didn't we do that? Damn it, Portland. We are never going to keep up the cool race with Austin if we're falling down on our obligations like this. That's great.
Let's do our Hick Watch.
Here's your Hick Watch for, let's see, Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Oh, yeah.
I wonder who suggested that name. I'd like to track down the guy that first came up with that and suggested that, you know, put that on the ballot that everybody voted for. I'd like to know where that came from.
Well, the thing was that there are, if you go do a search online for it and find the Austin City's website that has this, there's probably a good 100 names that people have nominated. And most of these, you know, the only person who voted for it was that person.
Yeah.
And most of them are ridiculous because, you know, very few people are taking this whole thing seriously. But it's very funny to see, you know, the number of votes, 1, 2, 5, 10, 20, and then the top one that just immediately 7, leaps 000. from like 15 votes or something to 4,782 votes for the Fred Durst Center for the Humanities.
Really is
Arts.
Great. Well, it's like at one point NASA had to just decree that in their online naming things, like you could no longer name things after Stephen Colbert because everything was being named the Colbert something or other. Here's Don Taylor with your Hick Watch.
Police in the southern Louisiana city of Houma say a woman upset over her lack of freezer space allegedly hit her boyfriend in the face with a frozen steak. Police told the Courier newspaper that 47-year-old Edith Tassin, also known as Edith Verdan, was booked with aggravated battery against 51-year-old Jerry Voisin. Authorities say she has been released on bond. Police say Voisin called police on Sunday evening and told them Tassin was trying to cool a mixed drink and became upset when it wouldn't fit in the packed freezer. Police say Voisin was bleeding from the right side of his face when officers arrived.
So there was no ice in the freezer because it was too filled with meat.
Well, she was trying to put a mixed drink into the freezer to cool it, and there was no room to put her gin and tonic or whatever into the freezer.
So this is where presumably he had emptied the freezer out of everything but meat, and so she had no choice but to insert the whole drink in, but that, of course, could also not fit.
Well, she was going to do that, and there was no room. So apparently she just grabbed a steak and hit him in the face with it.
Excellent. Somewhere Roald Dahl is smiling.
Yes. That's pretty much the
end.
Story.
All right, there you go. That's your Hick Watch.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering on around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Couple things. A couple of things. So, first of all, I sent you an email. I forwarded you something. It's a link, and so you're not going to just see the picture. You'll have the option to click on the link or not. It is from Eric, and he said, I wonder what Don's reaction would be to this picture.
Oh,
and then there's a link.
Really? Okay.
So you can click on it or not. I just sent you the email. So.
Oh, I think I know what this is. I think someone else actually already pointed this, already showed me this picture.
It's a...
Oh, no, this is different than the one I was thinking of.
It's a clown.
Yeah, people are sending me clown pictures all of the time.
Now you know what it's like to be Aaron Duran. People are sending pictures of hair. Let's see. Yeah, see, isn't that unnerving? Even I'm unnerved by that. I think it's Asian. Let's see. A couple of things here. Oh, my God, this says you are the embodiment of a lazy American. Quote, I have to press the button an extra 6 times if I want to heat something for 10 minutes, end quote. Well, yeah, and? I mean, really, what are we living in a first world country for? I mean, if I have to keep pressing the button. I mean, that's why we moved out of grass huts, sir. That's why we left the primordial ooze, is so that I could just press the thing one time and then have my, Totino's Hot Pockets ready.
I'm also inordinately annoyed to the point where I actually posted about it on Facebook that my brown sugar flavored Splenda does not have a zip closure to reclose the package, whereas the normal flavored Splenda does. So the big bag of just the plain Splenda has one of those, you rip it open,
right,
use it, and then it recloses with the zipper thing.
Right.
The smaller bag of the brown sugar Splenda does not have any kind of a reclosure on it, so I have to, like, go rooting around and find one of my little plastic tabs from IKEA.
Well, and that's where you really need it, too, because brown sugar solidifies into concrete, like, instantly.
Yeah, and why would the Splenda people put a zip closure on one kind of bag and not on the other kind of bag?
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know what it is? It's like that...
Every day when I make my oatmeal, it makes me angry.
It's like the Bare Essentials makeup. If you get the large size Bare Essentials, so it's got that little slide. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you ever use the Bare Essentials stuff?
No, yeah, I use that.
It occurred to me, I never actually asked you if you knew what I was talking about. I was just sitting going on about cosmetics. Because
we're talking about the powdered mineral makeup.
Right. And if you get the smaller one, it's got the holes in the top or whatever. And the thing is, like, everyone on earth who uses that makeup, because apparently it's sort of becoming, it's like replacing MAC makeup as the standard for, like, any, like, TV work, film work, whatever, has had the same complaint, which is that the smaller container and the larger container have two different types of tops. One of them has a little thing where you slide it open. It's like a little, it's like the top of that Parmesan cheese tube from Kraft, where you just turn it and then you turn it to close it again. The other one doesn't. It just has holes punched in the top, which means that you are always spilling it everywhere. If it turns over in the bag, if the lid is slightly ajar, and it just ends up spilling everywhere. And for some reason, they've just opted to never, ever change the way that the lid on the smaller, which sort of just leverages you into buying the bigger one. But with the Splenda thing, it's actually two different types of sugar altogether, two different types of Splenda altogether. Splenda freaks me out, by the way. I try not to think about that stuff too much. Because it's made from sugar, but it's not sugar.
Right.
Whoa!
It's just chemicals.
But it's...
And then the brown sugar Splenda is different, too, because to get the whole brown sugar concept with the moisture and the flavor and what have you, it's actually, the brown sugar Splenda is half real brown sugar and half Splenda. So it's, like, actually half the calories of sugar.
See, but that makes me wonder, if it's made from sugar but not sugar, and you say chemicals, but, like, what does that mean?
It means that no matter how much they say it's made from sugar, it's not sugar. What it is they broke down the chemicals that they broke down sugar on a molecular level and turned it into something else that's unnatural, but that is sweet and then but does not have the caloric impact that actual real sugar does.
Apparently, Splenda is sugar, but with the carbon atoms replaced with chlorine atoms.
Mm.
So there you go.
Okay.
Now we know. I can check that off the list of things that just have plagued me like forever and ever. Here is Don Taylor. By the way, just reasons I love the internet, number 742,000, because listeners like Aaron can send me this. I'll have to watch this later in my private time. This just says in all caps, dude. Anything that starts dude or OMG is a thing that I will read immediately. Dude, here's a video of Jesse Jackson meeting the band Cannibal Corpse at an airport in Belgium.
Okay.
Actually, he says Cannibal Freaking Corpse, and I added a band parenthetically for those. Because otherwise it just sounds like Jesse Jackson is meeting an actual Cannibal Corpse, which is weird. Yeah, here's a video of Jesse Jackson meeting Cannibal Freaking Corpse at an airport in Belgium. Why would that ever happen? Why would Cannibal Corpse be meeting Jesse Jackson in Belgium at an airport? Do they secretly run the world? Are they like the famous corporation? Were they
just coincidentally both in Belgium at the same time and at the airport and went, "Hey, Jesse Jackson," and he said, "Hey, Cannibal Corpse."
I wonder if it's like it would have. It's like in half of the conversation is him rhyming everything, and the other half is them going. Really? So do they have? What are the drinks like in first class?
Maybe Jesse Jackson's a big fan.
Jesse Jackson meeting a George Corpse Grinder Fisher. That's that'll be right up there with the Nixon Elvis photo. All right, here's Don Taylor.
If Americans could have any superpower they wanted, we could do this as a Geek Watch, but I don't think it's geeky quite enough.
I heard superpower.
Do you want to do it as a Geek Watch?
Probably not.
No. A new poll by the Marist polling organization finds that most people, if given their druthers, would have the ability to read minds or time travel. That would be the superpower they would choose. 28% of people polled elected those as their top choices, while 16% said they'd want to fly, and 11% wished they could teleport. Finally, 10% said they'd choose the power of invisibility, while a remaining 8%, likely those most in need of rescuing, were unable to make up their minds as to what kind of...
I like the power to think.
And if you go to their website, maristpoll.marist.edu, there is an entire chart that breaks it down by area, by region, household income, education, age, generation, race, and who wanted which superpowers.
Well, that is pretty fascinating, actually. At some point, I will, in fact, go read that because it would be interesting to see what socioeconomic background produces the desire for what superpower. But let me just ask you this.
Unsurprisingly, white people choose invisibility a lot more than non-white people.
Well, because non-white people are already invisible
to
large sections.
They would rather be able to fly.
We already don't notice those people, Don.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask you this, though. If you had the ability to fly and the ability to teleport seem to be almost the same thing. In other words, if I could fly to England, I could also just teleport there. It seems like it'd be faster.
Yeah, but that's the thing is teleporting is quicker.
Teleporting means I couldn't hover in the air, though, probably.
Right. If you can fly, you could hover above people and you could taunt them.
Teleporting, like if you teleport in the middle of the air, you'd then just fall. You teleport back to the ground.
Right.
And speedily so.
So it's a matter of, but then again, if you can teleport, then you'd be a lot less noticeable. Because if you're flying, people could probably see you. And so I think it's a matter of flashiness, really. Do you want to be able to taunt people? Do you want them to not see you when you're going from place to place?
Okay, well, what do you pick, the flying or the teleporting?
Between those, I'd probably pick flying because it would be fun.
I think I would go with somebody else. Flying is fun. Teleporting isn't as fun and maybe dangerous. That's true.
Too. You could end up in the middle of a rock or something.
You know where you're going to land.
Yeah.
If you teleport, you could just... Now, wait a minute. What am I thinking of?
If you could teleport, you could, save kittens from trees and things like that, whereas teleporting, you'd have to teleport up into the tree and then back down. That would be kind of awkward.
What is the teleporting thing I'm thinking of where it's like people would actually end up, in the middle of a brick wall? There's something like a book or a movie or some science fiction yarn where people would teleport or they would – and it's like if you picked wrong, you would end up, like in the middle of a planet.
Well, I think that – pretty much, if you're going to be literal about teleportation, then that would be any teleportation. You could, if you just figured wrong, you could end up, in the middle of a tree or in the trunk of somebody's car.
Unsurprisingly, it was apparently Star Trek.
Probably,
which I guess I could have just get. That's a thing. That's like guessing E on Wheel of Fortune or something, or R. You just go is it Star Trek? Because the odds are 40% that's probably going to be the case.
So, if you could have any superpower, what would yours be?
Well, of that list, or just anything at all,
any that you could think of.
Wow, I don't know. I am one of those people who apparently can't decide. Because, I don't know, because if you think about all the extant superpowers, I just keep thinking of Superman, but I can't really... The dumb thing about it is that I keep thinking of other superpowers, but none of them really seem desirable except the ones that Superman has.
Mine would be that I could reach into my pocket and pull out anything that I want. As long as it could be it would have to be small enough to fit in my pocket, obviously. But if I need something that is pocket-sized, I could just reach in my pocket and it would be there.
What if could you pull out a series of small things that could be made into a larger thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you could pull out like pieces of a microwave one by one.
Right.
Okay, but you have to assemble it.
Mostly it would be things I need a gun.
I need my car keys. There they are.
I want a candy bar. I need a $100 bill. And I would just, and there it would be.
Yeah, no, I got nothing. If it comes to that, you'll have to choose for me.
Okay.
All right. And don't give me a thing where I sneeze marbles. Because that's stupid.
It's less a superpower, really, I think, than a very awkward defect.
I suppose. Yeah, that's the thing that's good at parties, but really nowhere else.
We played a game once. My very first venture when my husband was making me play role playing games, and we were playing this game based on the magic system. I'm not sure what it was, but I was playing like a magic user, and one of my skills that I had is that I could turn any solid object into any other solid object. I could turn it into any other material, basically. So like
a car into cheese.
Right, exactly. Okay. And so that was the thing is that, and you know, us, so like there's a guy and he's got a gun and I could turn the gun into water and it would just spread. But the thing is, I could never think of anything except for food. So I was always turning things into food. So it's like, okay, the guy, he's got a gun. And it's like, okay, I turn his gun into sparkling mandarin orange jello. They were, his shoes are chocolate.
It seems like
I always turn things into food.
Well, that seems useful though, because if you're questing, that way you don't have to. You're never going to be without, because food is the thing that's hardest to find, I would imagine. And with enough food, you could probably buy your way out of any situation in which you might, be facing trouble.
Plus, I think if you're dealing with bad guys, turning their weapons into food,
strangely emasculating.
It's just screwing with their heads on top of everything else.
So he's got a handful of cottage cheese or something.
Exactly.
All right. We got to get to the top five here. So, do we have anything else that needs to get done absolutely this moment, this instant, today?
Yes. I have one story I need to talk about.
And I wouldn't be going right to the top five except we put it off many days.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. And I have to do the story because as soon as I saw the story, I knew we had to do it. And then Bruce Agler sent it to me, so he knew we needed to do it. So obviously it has to be done. Police say they've questioned one of two people in the case of a British woman who died after receiving cosmetic injections into her buttocks at a hotel near Philadelphia International Airport. Lieutenant Ray Evers said police issued a search warrant Tuesday night to the home of a woman they think set up the appointment online. That woman has been questioned but is not under arrest. The 20-year-old British student died early Tuesday after she apparently flew to Philadelphia to get silicone injections into her butt at a Hampton Inn in southwest Philly. Police executed a search warrant at the Hampton Inn, and they had suspicion the two women had performed butt implant procedures inside the rooms. Suspicions of these hotel room medical procedures came about after Claudia Adesay died around 1:30 a.m. after being taken to a Delaware County hospital. Adesay had a butt enhancement procedure around noon on Monday and then started to complain about chest pain around midnight. This was the second time Adesay turned to these women for butt enhancement. Adesay and her friend, who had her hips done around this time, had gotten butt enhancement procedures last November. It wasn't clear if the women who administered the injections were licensed to do
so. The woman was a tourist. So it was like, was this the reason? Do we know if this is the reason she was there? Like, did she see it online? Come to glorious Philadelphia to our hotel room.
There were four female students from England. They traveled to Philadelphia and planned to stay a week. Two of the women were there for support and to go to New York City for a birthday party, while the other two stayed in Philadelphia to have cosmetic procedures performed. One woman paid $1,800 to get hip injections, while Adesay paid an unknown amount to have her buttocks enhanced.
You know, and this is a side issue, but I'm actually looking at the article itself here, the butt implant headline, and I try never to read message boards for these stories because it always just evolves into, well, if liberals didn't, but there's a sidebar thing where it like shows you like most recent comment, and someone says, when did butt graduate from slang? When did butt become something you could just put in the headline of a news story via an NBC affiliate website? So this is actually from an NBC website.
I was wondering the same thing.
That really is interesting.
When do we graduate to ass?
The other thing is that they're saying the FDA got involved to try to figure out the legality of the injections, so they're not even really sure that it's illegal.
I think it's a matter of it's illegal, but how illegal? If the woman doing the procedure was not licensed to do so, that's illegal. If she was also not using an FDA approved,
oh, so there may be
silicone,
many variations on the crime. There are many levels on which this is illegal. Okay, so it's not just like there's a stock like.
And also, they're trying to figure out why this woman had chest pains and died, because generally, just having silicone injected into your ass does not give you a heart attack.
Okay, but if they injected it into like your heart, let's say, or your veins.
Or if it wasn't, you know, FDA-approved silicone and it was something she got from China and it was full of, like, lead or something.
Or if it was instead Quaker State 40-weight motor oil.
Yes, exactly.
Let's say. Then that's, okay, there you go. You know, and by the way, you'll note that we got through this entire story without going, butt injection. Because, you know, we don't do that. That's not the sort of humor we traffic in.
That's right.
We should just segue from that to this. It's E.H. Vending's Name That Snack. Clue number three. You can find out more about E.H. Vending by going to ehvending.com. You say to yourself, why would I want to go to E.H. Vending? I am not the business owner. But you know what? If you work at a business, you work at a company, two things. Either A, they got a vending machine, or B, they don't have a vending machine. If they don't have a vending machine, it may be because your boss, the man, the big cheese, the head honcho, top dog, he says, well, look, I just can't afford that. It's, you know, it's just one of those things. I'd like to have it in some glorious, sparkling future where I can teleport. Maybe we'll have a vending machine. But for now, no. Here's the thing. You can find him at an affordable way to get a vending machine there. Then you, the employees, are happy. He, the boss, is happy because, again, happy workers. And then you're the man who solved the problem. You're the person who found the way out of this this kerfuffle for him. So that's situation one. Situation two, he does have a vending machine. But here's the thing. As we all know, it's not about profits. It's about percentage of profit growth, kids, year to year. That's fiscal year, not calendar year. So if you can actually find your boss, your company, a way to save money, then you will be held in the highest esteem, and perhaps you will be spared the next time that layoffs come around. So here's what you do. You hook your boss up with EH Vending. EH Vending finds a way to meet the vending needs, to provide the same service you're getting now, maybe a better service, maybe you have more machines, maybe better variety, and, you know, for probably a little bit less money. They're going to be able to find something that is actually going to work with the budget that they want to be spending, the money that they want to be spending as opposed to the money they are spending. So a lot of times the vending companies will, you know, they'll feel that they've got a lock on a business, and then they gradually just raise their prices over time, or they find that they're going to be ratcheting up the prices on businesses that maybe have a fewer number of outlets. And so EH Vending eliminates all of that. They cut the right through all of that by dealing with people directly and finding something that works with their budget. So they'll find a price that works for you or your business. So you contact them via ehvending.com, or you can contact Josh. He's the owner. You're going to go. It's not like you're going to go through some middleman. It's not like you're going to send some Shelley Levine guy out to your place to talk to you about that. Do you want the big hunk, or do you want the trail mix? You're going to talk to the man himself. That is Josh. He's the owner at 360-816-1853. Or you can also talk to James, sales manager there. James, 503-897-8204. And this is not just regular vending machines, by the way. They got those with the snack and the soda. They also have coffee services, and they've got everything you could possibly need. So if you need anything like that, any variety on your current vending service, it's ehvending.com or 360-816-1853. Today's clue, clue number three, is round. And it's today's clue.
I know what it is.
Do you really?
No.
Okay.
I think I could guess, but if I was right, it would spoil everything.
That's true. Round. Round. There you go. If you are the first person to correctly identify that snack come Friday, once we've given up Friday's clue, and you do it via snack@rickemerson.com, you win yourself. We got to get a few more of these, because actually two of these are spoken for. I got to send those off today at the post office. We got two of those. We got one left here. Then we have to get some more sent our way from EH Vending. Because when listener John came by, picked up his bag, he actually looked inside and he said, my God, this is heavy. And it is, because it's filled with a vast variety of wondrous things.
There are several pounds worth of snacks in each one of those bags, and a wide variety of snacks, salty, sweet, delicious.
It really is quite something. So if you're the first person to correctly answer that Friday, once that clue is given out at snack@rickemerson.com, you answer it, you'll be the winner of the remaining bag here in the studio, courtesy of ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. Don't forget to join us, by the way, tomorrow, when we'll be talking to Joel Carter from Justified. That is the show. It begins its second season tonight on FX. Listener Jenny on Facebook was saying, she said, Californication has gone all cartoony and suckish, and there's nothing else. What are you watching? And I said, well, at the risk of being a broken record, probably too late, but you ought to be watching The Wire if you haven't ever seen that. Or said you could watch season one of Justified if you haven't. It's out now, and then season two is just starting, so you could still be caught up. You could watch it all, watch the whole first season in like a week, and then you get caught up on season two, which begins tonight on FX.
And join us for our weekly journey when we discuss it.
That's right.
Like rampant fanboys that we are.
That's right. So not only do we get to watch the season two premiere tonight, so we're going to be recapping it tomorrow. I totally forgot about that. Mm-hmm. And Joel Carter, who plays Ava Crowder on Justified, she'll be our guest tomorrow.
We are one step closer to Walton Goggins.
It really is just, I mean, mean, it's amazing. It's like in Battleship, and we're hitting all around him. And so always have to zero in. All right. Here is your top five for, what the hell is today? Wednesday? Still?
Yes, it's Wednesday.
It is Wednesday. By God, you're right. Here's your top five for Wednesday.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right. So I hold here in my hands today's top five.
I can hear it. It's crumbly.
I've been waiting to hand it to you because I didn't want the... I didn't want either the joy or the horror to come too soon in the show and distract you. Okay. Probably a mix of both.
Okay.
All right. So this is from listener Jerry.
Here we go.
Listener Jerry submitted these. Now, he didn't specify what age he was or what, you know, what grade he would have been in. I'm guessing maybe late middle school, early high school, maybe later on in high school. But, you know, eighth grade or, you know, because before eighth grade, you're not really thinking about making out. And even if you are, the concept of a makeout song probably doesn't occur to you until you're in high school. Because that's the thing where you have to have the two things have to develop. The whole desire to make out in the first place. And that's, you know, that's an 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old thing. And also, though, the appreciation of music and music as an appropriate soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you can't love music when you're a kid, but the idea of the right song at the right moment, that's a thing that probably doesn't hit you until you're a teenager. That's sort of a little bit of fuzzy logic that doesn't occur to you until later. I'm guessing high school. He didn't specify. But he said that he and his friends, after what I think John Cusack would call many beers, put this list together. So this is Jerry apparently speaking on behalf of his...
Jerry and his cronies.
Jerry and his bros. So this is his list. This is listener Jerry's list of the top five makeout songs from his youth. Don Taylor?
Number five, Bad English,
yeah.
When I See You Smile.
Right out of the gate, we start to...
I love
we
this
start
song.
Strong. Okay, here's the thing. So do I. And I was... See, I was thinking you would loathe this song. Sometimes I wonder how I have this 45. When the flip side, Price of Love. I just wouldn't have a clue. Mr. John Waits, ladies and gentlemen. Cause sometimes it seems like this world's closing in on me. There's no way. What band did John Waits sing for? Was it the Babies?
Yeah, I think so.
So John Waits had a he was in Bad English, a little bit of a solo career, and I think he sang for the Babies, who had that hit that is escaping me now. Well, it doesn't really matter.
He's one of those guys, I loved the way he looked. Because he's one of those guys, he was not pretty.
No, he was an unattractive man in some ways.
He was not an attractive man, but he just had that kind of cool look to him. Like, you know, just kind of thought he'd be a cool guy to hang out with.
And I just did the thing of morphing his name in Tom Waits and calling him John Waits, which is a thing that probably works out worse for Tom Waits than for John Waits.
See a ray of light.
Oh.
Didn't he do Missing You?
Yeah, I ain't missing you at all. That was his solo joint.
Yeah.
So it's, and I think that actually came before this, so I think it was he was with the Babies, then he did, John Waits did a solo record, and then it was Bad English, I think for only this one record. I think they only did this one album. Okay, so by the way, this was my junior. This was the theme song for my junior prom, I believe. It was some damn dance. I think it was the junior prom, but it was one of those big, you know, because there's the prom, and then what's the other one? There's homecoming.
Yeah.
And then there's like whatever, like Sadie Hawkins and whatever. And but for one of the big like dances that is like on the calendar. One of the quintessential school dances, this was the song, and I think it was the junior prom. Can't remember for the life of me what the senior prom song would have been, though. Probably something by Richard Marx. Oh, you know I can do anything. Yeah.
And we saw Dirty Dancing on Friday, and there's a couple of songs, like there's the Eric Carmen song in the middle of it. And of course, the one that Swayze wrote, and that thing, yeah, She's Like the Wind. And there's a point in all those songs where, as my husband put it, Patrick turns to me and just goes, "Oh God, 80s horns." I wanna give it
I want to quit the fight.
Yeah.
Guitar.
This is where the guitarist is feeling it. He's got his eyes closed. Too much soul to keep his eyes open.
This is where in every video the girl is standing alone with tears running down her face.
Or it's just a slow motion shot of the crowd, like a black and white grainy shot of the crowd, like, you know, like holding up lighters. Wow. All right. These are listener Jerry's top five makeout songs from his undoubtedly misspent youth. Don Taylor.
I'm starting to hate listener Jerry, by the way. Number four is Bryan Adams.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's I've given a little something away there. Sorry,
Bryan
I hit that
Adams.
Out of order. Okay, I like
Heaven.
This song. Just as you like When I See You Smile by Bad English, I like this song.
There's just something about Bryan Adams that I think it's because of that goddamn song he did with Rod Stewart and Sting for Robin Hood.
That's
ever since then, I've just never been able
all
to...
All for Love?
Yeah, I've never been able to forgive him after that.
A lot of people dislike Bryan Adams, but here's the thing. An equal number of people like him and feel secretly ashamed because they think they're the only one. I mean, this was co-written by a guy named Jim Vallance, I think. And this has what one rock critic called rhinestone chord changes, which were the hallmark of the 80s, which is this right here. It's that, just that real, like, where you hear that progression, that power chord progression a jillion times in every power ballad or quasi-power ballad. Think also Blaze of Glory by Jon Bon Jovi. I really have to say, I do love this song. I do love this song. And you know what song? You know what is it? You know what? In my opinion, is one of the best songs of the one of the best pop rock songs of the 20th century is Summer of 69.
I was going to say Summer of 69.
That
Damn
is one
it.
Of the.
I wish I'd gotten to it faster.
No, it's a great song. And
it really is.
And I will fight any man who says otherwise. Not really.
Rick Emerson will battle you.
I will lose, but. That song he did with Rod Stewart and Sting really was one of the worst things ever.
Yeah.
Everybody was slumming there amazingly.
Yeah.
It was like they each shamed the other.
And they were all just starting to look their age, except that Bryan Adams, to his credit, was the only one who had changed up his haircut. So you're going, really, Rod Stewart? You're like 75 years old and you have the same do you had when you were in Faces.
I saw him again on the Home Shopping Network the other day. He was like, he was doing that, he's been on there like three times singing, he's doing that stupid, that Great American Songbook thing, where it's like he's singing, murdering classics, and it's like him and a backing band, and then like a backing tape. I mean, it's like, obviously, there's some live stuff going on, but he's also got a tape underneath him, and also, he's in the studios of the Home Shopping Network. There's no crowd, there's no one there. It's like an early Poison video, where they're on stage playing to no one. And he's singing Sunny Side of the Street.
Oh, God.
And he's just ruining it because he sings it like Rod Stewart sings everything. Yeah. Even good Rod Stewart, you know, when he had a voice, shouldn't have sung that song. But now Rod Stewart, you know, at the age of like 80, singing Sunny Side of the Street is like the worst thing you've ever heard.
Yeah, I told Patrick one day how much I really loved the song Have I Told You Lately That I Love You? And Patrick was going, oh, my God, that song's horrible. And I was like... Really? And it turned out he'd only ever heard Rod Stewart's version of it.
No,
Van Morrison.
No, don't. Yeah. Rod Stewart ruins everything. These are the top five makeout songs from listener Jerry's Bygone Youth, Don Taylor.
Number three, Prince, Purple
Rain. All
right,
there we go. That's what I'm talking about.
They, before Dirty Dancing on Friday, one of the trailers that Bobby showed was the trailer for the movie Purple Rain, which is a terrible, terrible movie.
It's not a good movie. It's a bad movie.
It's so terrible.
Yeah. I forget who it was that made this observation. I think it was Ryan White, who noted that, you know, the end of Purple Rain, with the band suddenly plays the song that they've never played before, ever. And flawlessly, though. I mean, the song which has never been performed, it's like, but every single note is done perfectly the first time out. Never played it before, doesn't matter. Song performed flawlessly.
Only thing thing the Purple Rain really did for me was it made me wish that Morris Day was a bigger star.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that's a guy that really got gypped. I mean, I love Prince, but the Hand of Time really was cruel to Morris Day. No pun intended. Purple Rain. This, to me, though, I have said that, to me, this is sort of the definitive 80s ballad. That if I were to look back at the 80s, if the 80s were a prom, this would be like the song that closes out the prom at midnight. This is the song that, in terms of ballads, this song defines the 80s more than any other song I can think of. I mean, in ways both good and bad, this is totally representative of that era. The song always seems like it's going too slow, though. Seems like it's on the wrong speed often. Also, it's like 9 hours long. I've run out of things to say.
Okay.
I just keep picturing that Weird Al thing where he's like catching a fly with his tongue. all right. These are Listener Jerry's top five makeout songs from his youth. Don Taylor.
Right, Listener Jerry redeems himself in my eyes here. Number two, Cyndi Lauper, Time After Time.
I love this song.
I do, too.
I'm a huge fan of
this
song.
This song just kills me.
It's a great song, and I love Cyndi Lauper in general, and I love this song specifically. And I would always dance with this hot Filipino girl named Melissa, who, of course, never actually spoke to me, afterward. It's like the song would end, and it was like as soon as the fade out, like you hear the song fading out at the end, like some songs end cold and some fade. As soon as the fade would begin,
she just turn around.
She would just drop her hands and just leave. Because we had this rule at the school that like the girls were not allowed to say they were not allowed to say no if a guy asked them to dance.
Wow, that's interesting. That's kind of creepy.
Unless that was just a rule created for me. I guess maybe they had the best intentions because I think they realized that if a girl said no, that if you were a guy, you had to just go home and kill yourself. Like you could just never come to school again.
And it's kind of like that rule, though, where you have to give everyone in class a Valentine.
Yeah, well, which we also had.
Never really works.
Even then, we had that rule. Yeah. No, it was kind of creepy, but I sort of understand why they did it. But I'm not saying that, you know, that. What a great song, though. Time after time. And maybe it was me. I think it was also that I was in, like, I think I would have been, like, an eighth grade or something. So I think I might have also been on the precipice of that. You're almost, like, interested in, you know, boys or girls, but you're still kind of grossed out by the whole thing, too. And so, like, I think even the guys were, like, dancing because, like, you were supposed to. And, like, because you kind of, you know, girls are kind of interesting and cute, but you're still kind of, like, but they're still girls. You know, and it was like that weird nether ground between childhood and adolescence. So yeah, you would see this ritual all over the dance floor. As soon as the song would end, one or both of the partners would just go and drop their hands and just scurry away and like try to hide in the darkness, try to hide in the shadows. Only in retrospect do I realize that everybody, you know, boys and girls alike, but especially the girls in this case, they were probably just as weird and terrified and awkward feeling as the guys.
Yeah.
Because guys think, you know, that like girls are just these flawless golden creatures that are always bathed in a halo of beauty, which they are. But girls, of course, you know, feel all kinds of awkward, more so than guys, I think, most of the time. And I didn't realize that then. So, I just assumed that I was repellent.
Yeah, if I could actually go back and impart one piece of advice, one little bit of wisdom to my teenage self, it would be that. Because I felt so awkward, and I was just such a mess of hormones. And I was just so unbelievably horny all of the time. And I just had no idea, like, how easy it would have been to just get laid, nothing else.
If you'd just known.
All I would have had to have done was just ask. But instead, I just,
Nobody likes me. I'm homely. And which, yeah, you just have no idea that, like, A, everybody feels that way. And also that it's largely not true to whatever degree you think it is true. And let's put it this way. Even if you are weird-looking or homely as a teenager, kind of everybody is, so you're grading on a curve there.
But also the fact that they were, like, you know, 15-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Dear God, yes, I could have gotten laid.
They'd have sex with mud, really. I mean, as Lenny Bruce once said. No offense. But you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
It's like...
No, I know. I mean...
If you're good-looking, great. It's just not necessary. it's that moment right there. It's that moment right there. Wow. And she's just gotten better as a singer. If you see her sing now...
Yeah.
I mean, that voice of hers is really just... She was always a better singer than Madonna, which is an unfair comparison, I suppose. But her voice has just... Whereas Madonna sort of masks it with an increasingly complex series of studio tricks, Cyndi Lauper has just become a legitimately great singer.
And also, Cyndi Lauper looks great.
She really does.
While as Madonna just looks like jerky with big pointy teeth.
She's all gristle and hate. Don.
Ah.
All right. These are listener Jerry's top five makeout songs from his adolescence. Don Taylor, what's number one?
Speaking of which, number one, Madonna. Crazy for You.
Yeah. The only thing I have to say about this song is that I don't really remember much about it from whenever it came out, like 84, whenever. Is this on Like a Prayer or Like a Virgin? No, it was on the Vision Quest soundtrack, so that would have been like...
And so was that Bryan Adams song, wasn't it? Or the Bad English song? One of those first
the Bryan
two songs
Adams thing.
Was on the Vision Quest soundtrack as well.
Also, Hungry for Heaven by Ronnie James Dio. All I remember is that years later, in 1995, I believe, when I was living in Salt Lake City, there was this girl that I went out with a few times, and she always wanted to make out in the car for some reason. I found out later she was still married, which is a thing that she didn't really share that with me right out front. She didn't say, "Ooh, by the way, husband at home." I always just thought that she just liked to make out in the car because it was hot. And it kind of was, but, I don't think that was her motivation. But I do remember at one point, I swear to God, I'm not trying to gross everybody out by, I know that listener Jenny in particular has said that she's horrified every time I tell a story like this. Because then it's like thinking of your brother, apparently having a relations.
Okay.
But we're in the car and macking, as they say. No, but we get 60 seconds into it, one kiss in, and she goes, no, hold on, stop for a second. And she goes, I gotta get something. She reaches into the glove box, and I think, well, that's a girl who comes prepared early in the evening, but okay. She's reaching into the glove box because she has to get something before we go any further. And I'm like, I know what that means. I swear to Christ, she was reaching into the glove box to get the Vision Quest soundtrack on cassette because she wanted to make out to this song. It was like she stopped the making out in 1995. Stopped the making out. So she could get this tape out of the glove box and put it on to be the soundtrack, to the love.
Okay.
What is up with that, Don Taylor?
I don't know. Chicks be crazy.
Seriously. I mean, but the thing about the crazy ones, also the hot ones. That's the thing. Crazy and hot go up. That's a directly related, that's a correlated ratio there.
I know that Madonna has been, defended by, say, Henry Rollins and people like that. I never got Madonna. I never gained any kind of an appreciation for Madonna. I remember when the video for Like a Virgin hit, and I remember sitting around with my friends, and most of them were male, who should have been going, "She's so hot," and we were all just watching the TV. And I remember us all going, "Why is she wearing
What's
a
the deal
wedding?
Again?
What is the thing?" Did that car just run over her? I don't get it.
we have to wrap this up. Will you do me a favor and open the door to the studio here?
Sure.
Because I would see if Sarah and Greg are actually waiting, that I'm gonna shout the closing to the show so they know that I'm making a good faith effort to wrap things up on time. No. Oh, excellent. Okay. Don Taylor, you are leaving right now to Ham-Fisted Radio at Cascadia.fm, which you can hear at 4 p.m. Pacific time at Cascadia.fm, or later on at HamFistedRadio.com. Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts. All right. Thank you to listener Jerry for submitting this. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll talk to Joel Carter of the TV show Justified, which you really ought to be watching. That is tonight, 10 o'clock on FX, and we'll do our recap of that tomorrow, Thursday, as well. Rick Emerson's show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, brought up by Mr. Thomas Gale, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have today's Legion of News episode as an encore, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program, The Rick Emerson Show, made possible by generous grant from y'all. So thank you for doing that. Please spread the word. Have you told two people today? So forth. It is Wednesday, February 9th, 2011. That is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.